Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Ah, Monday at last. As Mark Twain said in the Diary of Adam and Eve, Sunday pulled through. I got to tell you, it's a little odd around here. I feel a little lost back here in the studio. Horn intern junior grade, Berg, is off at a couple of days worth of day camp. Won't be back until tomorrow. Kind of odd not to have him in here, talking when Dad has the mic open, and asking questions, and learning how to be a producer at some point, I hope. Of course, mostly what I get is, Dad, I want my own show. Not yet, son. Not yet. No. Your old man has enough problems opening his mouth and letting bats fly out. It could be a real humdinger. well, you know what I mean. But that's not what this is. No, enough about me. Because we got plenty to do. We got health care that I think is appropriate to talk about this evening. We also have the elections in Iran. And I will simply say that with regard to the elections in Iran, the American in so-called intelligence community, you might easily think of it as the American meddling community as well. That's meddle with a D. Two Ds, an L, an I, and a G, and an N, M, E, you know, but not in that particular order. Meddling, the American meddling community, has a long history of meddling in the affairs of Iran. You remember the hostage crisis of the late 1970s were planted in the 1950s. When we deposed the duly and democratically elected Prime Minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh. Mm-hmm. Well, so too, am I reading the reports out of Iran and their post-election trauma and turmoil, and wondering how much we had a hand in. And frankly, I also wonder how much the CIA does that the president never knows about. Remember that phrase, plausible deniability? Plausible deniability is big on the list over at CIA headquarters in, what, McLean, Virginia? So as I see the photographs of the black-clad riot troops who, yeah, frankly... And I got these photographs from our buddy, pop culture correspondent David from Maine. And I realize there are certain limitations on talking about, photographs on the radio. But these are at, boston.com. They are, today's page on the internet. The title is Iran's Disputed Election. And on the one hand, when you see all the green-clad young people marching through the streets over what they perceive to be a stolen election, I can't help but think, why didn't America, why did not the United States have that kind of courage in 2000? Why didn't it? Because these are marches in Tehran. Why did we not clog the streets of Washington, D.C. until not a car could move to prevent that ignorant, pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout from stealing our election from us? Oh, it may prove a fruitless effort on the part of these young Iranians. Entrenched power is entrenched power because it's entrenched. See, entrenched. But why didn't we? As liberals and progressives, I think we've got some real, live, honest-to-God, genuine navel-gazing to do over that question. Why were there not millions in the streets day in and day out? We certainly existed in the majority, generally speaking. But instead, we let a gang of Brooks Brothers shirted congressional aide thugs stop the vote counting in Dade County. And we're still paying for that. You're still paying for it. Our whole nation is paying for it, and we have paid in buckets of blood and treasure and happiness and jobs and homes and marriages and families. And all the things that make up what it is that we consider to be the essence of the American life. We have paid with what was once the largest single manufacturing concern in the so-called free world. We have paid in bankruptcies. We have paid in a healthcare system that is truly Humpty Dumpty-like. And all the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put the healthcare system back together again, especially insofar as they're trying to put it back together the way it was. It is shattered, and it needs to be rebuilt on entirely new plans. We paid for our silence. We paid dearly for our apathy. We paid with the coin of the realm being the good reputation of the United States around the world. We have paid and paid and paid. And we may never put paid to the damage done by Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rice and, yes, Powell, Wolfowitz, on you, Bybee, Alito, Roberts. Shall I continue? God himself or herself or itself or nonself may only know the full butcher's bill for what we didn't do in late 2000. But that is not the case in Iran. In Iran, they are not going gentle into that good night. In Iran, the police, black-clad, who seemed with police written on their back in English, P-O-L-I-C-E, not in Arabic, not in some Farsi script. Police! That's what it says! What'd they do? Buy cast-off uniforms from the Blackwater? Police, black-clad, riot helmets, batons, beating people in the streets, armored and padded, anonymous, looking for all the world, just like the police in Minneapolis last summer. Looking for all the world, just like the police in Denver last summer. Anonymous, faceless, unidentifiable. Chasing and beating people who want nothing more than that their vote should count. And just as in America, a gang of pasty-faced old men attacking the young supporters of the other guy, the guy who got it stolen. One of the captions on the photos in this particular essay, members of the Iranian hardline volunteer Basij militia begin to enter Tehran University, where supporters of Mr. Hossein Mousavi were protesting against the latest election results. They're literally pulling down the gates. And they are mostly middle-aged. And they are in the, in the English definition, conservatives. Conservatives the world over are the same. Conservative Iranians, conservative Americans, religious fundamentalists, anti-democratic types, madmen, thugs. Photographs of government security men wielding batons, beating a man lying on the ground. A photograph of an old white-haired man with a beard pointing a stick at a young woman wearing canvas high-top sneakers and Western-style blue jeans. Some of her hair showing, pointing it at her as she lays on the ground. Those same black-clad police chasing young people through the streets on motorcycles like something out of Rollerball. Police and military kicking an unarmed young man while other members of the military and the police look on. A man with a baton cocked back, and although they don't play it very much in Iran, looking for all the world like a right-handed batter, waiting for a pitch on a 3-0 count. I do not endorse violence. I do not at all. But these demonstrations were not violent in their beginning. As is usually the case, it is the authoritarians who come in and ratchet up the violence and then turn around and blame the nonviolent for the violence. And frankly, I don't... Look, these are... Mousavi, Ahmadinejad, they were both selected by the religious diktat of their country. So we have no real way of knowing whether there would change schmange. You got one guy who's slightly less conservative than the other guy. But the young people want the less conservative guy, even if he's not as liberal as they would like him to be, because he is a reflection of their hopes for their future. And the police wear uniforms stamped with the word police on the back. Suffice to say that it is my opinion that what we are witnessing in the images and the reportage out of Iran is a little mirror held up to America. Oh, remember the right way. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not. I haven't been entirely factual here, because some people did take to the streets. There were groups of people marching through the streets in Washington. As I recall, there were groups, gangs of right-wing Republicans who attempted to surround the vice presidential residence of Al Gore and at their most full-throated volume screamed, "Get out! Get out! Get out!" at Mr. Gore. And giggled as they chanted phrases like "sore loser man." When he, Mr. Gore, the winner of the election, refused to simply give up and instead litigated, albeit half-heartedly for a while, until that case could reach the Supreme Court, where the Bush family had the fix in, and the fix's name was Rehnquist, and the fix's name was Scalia, and the fix's name was Thomas, and the fix's name was Kennedy, and the fix's name was O'Connor. Why are there no photographs like this from late 2000 in the United States, where we prize and cherish our freedom of speech, our freedom of assembly? Is it because we're better than Iranians? Is it because we're just a little bit more human? Or is it because we are a little bit more indolent, a lot more passive, a great deal more lazy, and considerably less interested in the perpetuation of our own freedoms? You tell me. You tell me. Because I'm not going to presume to have the answer. But I do know. I do know that we would be talking about a vastly different world this evening had any one of us, and I include myself, done in Washington, D.C., with the young people of Iran are trying to do in Tehran. But we had other things to do. We might gripe about it. We might blog about it or send an email about it, but we had other things to do. And those other things have cost us dearly. Those other things have cost us, I mentioned earlier, they have cost us everything, really, that we had. So that's a beginning place for this evening. Oh, silliness and right-wing stuff and crazed paranoia, the health care debate, lots of other things on the agenda for this evening. Your phone calls, first and foremost. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, if you've got a long-distance dialing program, a plan that doesn't cost you anything, you can save us a nickel or a buck by calling 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. And this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. This is Activist Radio. We'll be back. 25 minutes past the hour, and let's go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, what's happening?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. Your opening monologues are just wonderful. I love them. And I think one of the things, that song was also a wonderful play, and you're just doing excellent. But the answers are very apparent. First of all, back in 2000, there were quite a few people. And every time I sit there and I think of those horrible Bush years, there's a bunch of images that come to mind. You know, there's him golfing. There's him laughing.
Choking on the pretzel.
That's really not in the zeitgeist and in the top, in the top billings. Things like that woman's jaw with the hardball, baseball size lump on it. The guy with, that got shot in the back, black clad Darth Vader type stormtroopers with truncheons around this 56-year-old lady's neck in Portland. Tomatoes being thrown at the presidential limousine. Things like that, we get those images from an entirely different time period, a timeline. I mean, we don't have the life that the average Iranian does. And, I mean, in all sense and purposes, my goodness, they can't even be gay there or they get hung. So you have a population that's squeezed, from so many directions that, and not only that, they have a much smaller geographical location. I mean, if you really looked at the numbers, if we lived in a place the size of Iran, and we had the numbers come out as they did for before, the protests before the second Gulf War, or even the first Gulf War, there was a lot of protests for that first Gulf War. But these are things that are easy to forget because nobody pays attention to that. They're paying attention to the moron signs and all that other stuff. I mean, when we look at the world that we live in today, if they did the same thing in Iran, here that they just did in Iran with McCain, we would see exactly that. I think that's, we've been pushed so far, and I think, there's no difference between an Iranian or an Israeli or an American or any of these things. We're all human beings. And there's only so far that you can push anyone, and especially a mass population. I mean, look, our inflatement, as we've inflated our political power, and as we start to grab, this base populism, of the way things need to go with healthcare and the way things need to go with, everything. You've seen the right wing at the same time do the same thing. They can only be pushed so far. And right or wrong, and certainly I agree they're wrong, I think they're wrong, but right or wrong, that's when you start seeing reactions. I mean, now granted, I really don't think we'd ever see, because you never have. I don't think you'd ever see, when was the last time you've seen a bunch of crazed right-wingers march on Washington? When has there ever been 10 million right-wingers?
Not 10 million, but there was certainly a boatload of them around the vice presidential residence in 2000.
Well, yeah, but they probably trucked them in. They were all,
Well, they trucked them into Miami, too, though, Albert.
Oh, absolutely. And just like in Miami, there were people protesting down in Miami.
I mean, the teabagging wasn't even grassroots. That was that was AstroTurf.
And what did it have? How many people total? 100,000?
Maybe.
Across the entire country?
Yeah.
That's nothing. In the 100,000, sure, it's a lot, but not versus 20 million, not versus, and there's far more people. And the other sad fact is, we're running on the mill here, with our lives, God, we got to make healthcare payments and, we got to make sure we have enough money to, have food on the table and everything else. And, you look at the economy of 2000 versus the economy of today, and they pull that kind of stunt. Mm-mm. People, we start setting up camps again back, Hoovervilles and camping on, for our war bonuses. And, if you drive people to that level that, we have been before, either, by, strong arming them or manipulating the economy and allowing, robber barons to take over. I mean, heck, if we didn't have Barack Obama, I think we'd see the same thing. I'll tell you what, I know I was sick of it. I know I was sick of living in fear and, you know, thinking that my children have no future. And, you know, there's a lot of issues that are on the table today that, man, weren't even anywhere near it in 2007. You know, I mean, we're getting people to finally start looking at, you know, alternative energies as a daily part of their individual life. Everybody, not just, I mean, little towns like mine and, you know, towns that they're little and they don't have a big economy, but, you know, people will put the extra $9 that, you know, for the 3 credits of 300 kilowatt hours each, you know, and because if we use, you know, 900 kilowatts a month and we pay and we offshoot another $9 to pay for some wind or, you know, biofuel or any of these other things that are available now that weren't really, I mean, if it wasn't for people demanding it, we wouldn't have seen it. You know, I mean, we certainly have a long way to go. I think we're at least walking in that direction. Another thing I would like to address that is some news that just popped out was Netanyahu's statements regarding, you know, recognition of a Palestinian state.
Yeah, I saw some of that.
Now, it really just galls me because that is, well, the politics of the old paradigm. Well, you know what they're going to do. You know it. You know it. They've been doing it. They're slowly encroaching and encroaching and building walls. And they're essentially physically removing an entire population, totally cutting them off from, the, you know, their own little cities and so on and so forth. And the way that the, you know, Israelis seem to be behaving is that they would, they're never going to relinquish these, you know, little McMansionvilles on the hilltops in the middle of, you know.
Yeah, not hardly.
Israeli. Yeah, it's just not happening. You know, they take all the water, they take all the this, all of that. You know, we could have had peace treaties already. But they, you know, they said, oh, well, you know, you can't have water rights. You know, and those are little things that, you know, I think a lot of people forget. I think a lot of people don't really want to look at the fairness of the situation. And honestly, I think, you know, maybe we should just give it to them and it would, you know, I don't know. We got... That whole situation just needs to just stop. That's just a horrible situation. And, you know, and I think another thing that we need to look at is as these...
Look, Israel is never going to behave itself vis-a-vis the Palestinians until we look at them. And when I say until, I mean never. Mm. Until we look at them and say, it's what I argued a while back. Listen... you're big enough and bad enough to have a nuclear arsenal. The only nuclear arsenal in the Middle East. Well, you don't need our money anymore. You don't need our support anymore. So since you don't want to deal with the Palestinians and you don't want to deal with human rights issues and you want to be a nuclear power, you obviously don't need us. So goodbye. Best of luck. Now, then they would turn around and they would scream that we were anti-Semitic and that we were Israel haters and blah, 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 blah.
Yep. Yeah,
but they would also, but they would also pay attention. You know, this is real easy. You want to keep getting, the billions and billions and billions of dollars that my family and your family and every American family has been paying for a couple of generations now? You want that? Cool. Let us into all your nuclear facilities and let us personally go about the business of disarming your nuclear arsenal. Then the money spigot opens back up. Unfortunately, we do not have the power to do that in the United States.
Yeah, the willpower. Well, it is, I think, but, you know, well, did you happen to catch Max Blumenthal? I mean, yeah, I know those guys were all drunk, but did you?
Yeah, I played it on the show the other night.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
In fact, I played it specifically because I heard Malloy say, there is no way that I can play this on terrestrial radio because, you know, we'd never broadcast again. And, you know, what a shame that is because it was journalism. That was real journalism.
Yep.
Wrong. But because it's got the wrong words in it, it's not journalism that people can hear over the so-called public airwaves. So since Malloy couldn't play it on terrestrial radio, I played it here.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it in conjunction with that bizarre, twisted, dropped three hits of brown acid and went out and talked into the breathing microphone address that John Voight gave to the joint senatorial and House Republican campaign committees. Man, that was a weird end of the program, Albert. I mean, weird.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to what day was this?
You know, maybe Wednesday, Thursday?
I'll have to hit it up because I didn't catch that one. I'm getting back. I'm going to jump back into the pool here, but, you know, on this whole thing. I needed to dry off. I was getting pruney. You know, everybody needs a little break.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, then again, you know, you're dealing with the highly frustrating re-onset of winter in southwest Wisconsin, so.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Had any more hail, any more sleets, the river's blood, frogs and locusts? I mean, what?
No, none of that. Just 45-degree temperatures and...
Oh, that's good for those young tomatoes.
It totally sucked my gardening willpower away. And it just was, you know, like, well, can't argue with the sun. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You know, sacrifice something? You know.
So that just goes to prove there ain't no global warming.
No, but hang on. See, this is another thing where this is on the thread line. I'm glad you kind of went in that direction. You know, it takes human beings a long time to kind of, myself, everybody, it takes you a long time to kind of realize the obvious. And I think, you know, as the size of objects, you know, so when, you know, you look down at an individual, it may take them, you know, their whole lifetime to realize their mistakes or what have you. But if you look at a whole group of population, it takes many generations for these things to occur. And, you know, once we start getting movement, you know, like from the 60s, we've been moving pretty rapidly. Yeah, a couple hills here and there. But, you know, I mean, if you look at the consciousness of the mass amount of people, the people that sit here and realize and pay attention to these things and look at these things and desire to change them in your local communities, I mean, we still got to battle this CAFO stuff. This stuff ain't going away, you know, and these are things that, you know, it takes people a little while, you know, and the only thing I want to say is that we're starting to catch on faster, and that's a good thing. That's a thing that, you know, gives me hope. You know, we're starting to kind of catch on faster, but if you look at what, you know, in terms of science, you know, they call it the fifth or fourth state of matter, but in reality, it's the first state of matter. And we live in a soup. We're like phytoplankton in the ocean trying to discover what the ocean is and how it works based on its local, you know, parameters to our phytoplankton. But, you know, at that scale, well, things operate at a totally different level. You know what I mean? Like water's more viscous or what have you. Anyhow, we live in a big ocean. We're sitting here on this rock flying through this big ocean of plasma. 99.99999% of the universe is plasma.
Yeah, well, we are, and I know I've mentioned this on the air before. We're that old joke about the two young goldfish who swim by the old goldfish. And they swim by, hi, Gramps. Gramps says, hi, morning. Water sure feels nice this morning. And the two young fish swim by, one looks at the other and says, what's this water he's talking about? That's us. That's us. That's mostly non-self-aware, non-conscious the world. And I don't limit that to the Americans.
No. I mean, look at science. This is where we're talking global warming, and look at science. You know, we still don't, I mean, in turn, I say we, I'm talking convention. We don't really have a grasp on lightning. This is one of these things that the more we, you know, the better our instruments get, the more things we can see. We don't have a grasp on tornadoes. They have a couple of things that, you know, or guesses that they think this is how it works. But, you know, like we sit here and look at, you know, some of the highest wind temperatures, I mean, wind speeds ever recorded on this planet are around 370-something kilometers an hour. And we're pretty close to the sun. We try to say that the sun drives us, you know, and so on and so forth. But if you really look, the planets that are further out away from the sun, to where the sun looks like a little star, that virtually get no energy from this, have wind speeds in 1,100, 1,400, 1,600 kilometers an hour. Now, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is because I think there's a massive gap in our understanding of what we're in. And I think that a lot of the problems is because we've been on this old paradigm of, you know, liquid hydrocarbons, basically concentrated solar energy in the form of, you know, easily extractable oil. That, you know, I mean, even our currency system, our money system, our everything, the whole systems that we have erected and fabricated, these things are all going to have to change. They're going to change in Iran. One thing that's been bugging me out is North Korea. I don't know. They've been taking their crazy pills lately, all these systems are going to have to start, you know, changing. We're going to have to start looking at, the bigger picture in smaller ways. You know, and instead of sitting there taking this knowledge and, you know, isolating it and keeping it on a blog that's read by 50 people, you got to have the Bob from Cades that come out, the Mike Malloys that come out, you know, and so on and so forth in this political paradigm and systems that we've set up to, you know, get some change and get some real hell progress, get some real movement. You know, there's a funny little meme that was out there regarding, you know, Star Trek. And I've been hearing, you know, we've talked about this 100 times, and I just noticed this again today, where they were talking about how there was some journalist wrote an article talking about how, you know, Star Trek is going to be one of those iconic things that in 500 years people will still be talking about. And if you look at it, that's quite a statement. Because if we don't look back at people like Star Trek, you know, and that whole line, you know, with some certain reverence and some certain, you know, direction for which, you know, where we have to travel, if we don't do this, we won't be here in 500 years to look back on anything.
There's a great deal of truth in that, Albert. Look back. Okay, let's just you and me sitting here in 2009 look back 500 years. It's 1509 we're looking at. Oh, where's Eugene Finnerman when I need it? It's 1509. It is the early 16th century. Protestant Reformation is underway, as is the Renaissance.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Medici's.
But you still have idiots. You still have, at that point in time, you have a Spanish throne that has just found out that the world's largest gumball machine is giving out gold in the New World. Or they think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be treasures, spices, gold. And they think that the answer to their problems is to go and enslave an entire continent, the contours and dimensions of which they do not even understand or comprehend. What do we think of them now?
Well, I think of them as
benighted murderers, ignorant slaughterers. I just do.
Well, they just expanded the schism between self and consciousness to such a degree that in a way, I think if we didn't get that, we wouldn't be here. You know, it's almost like when you see populations behave in such ways, and we sit here and look at we place monetary value on dirt. Besides its fact that it's life giving, well, we want to keep it. You know, you know, when you were talking, you reminded me of that epic scene from Conan, from that old actor. He's the king, and he doesn't have his daughter anymore. And he says there's a time when all the gold loses its luster and the gems lose their sparkle, and all that's left is a father's love for his daughter. Now, I bring that in because I think that's us and humans and just our role of, you know, life in this planet and everything else like that. I sit here and I see a world where in the future there is no money. There can't be. You know, these are things, these lessons that, you know, our grandparent, you know, if your grandpa wasn't a great guy and was an alcoholic, don't emulate that. there's almost a reason why people behave the way they do. I mean, I can see it, or maybe it's delusion, but there's a reason that people behave the way they do. I think there's a reason that there's people that are bad, so we can learn from that. You know, and it may take a while. I mean, this is biological technology we're talking about. You know, heck, getting your frickin' electrons to operate in your computer and get the program to operate takes its own, you know, amount of work, and that never seems to end, you know. And I think it's the same thing with the biological technologies of our mind. You know, when we look at these systems of the way they did things, we now know how not to behave, how we cannot do these things. I mean, and I think little by little, longer, faster and faster, and mind you, I think that is becoming apparent to the whole. I think we're going to sit here and see a future that is not going to have these kinds of things as its priorities. The horrors that we've had as priorities are going to have to obviously change. I mean, God, I mean, I know it takes a while, and I know the, you know, old dogs take a while to learn new tricks, but I think there's a bunch of young people out there, and the young consciousness of the world, I mean, the young... Well, how many people?
Okay, at the risk of being the negative guy in this conversation, because I do appreciate you looking forward, Albert, I really do. Idealistic young people, optimistic youth, don't they turn into bitter, crotchety, middle-aged people and curmudgeonly old folks? Isn't that how it works? How long in the face of the constant frustration can they hang on to that optimism, that idealism?
Well,
you know what? There's this paraphrase of something Churchill is alleged to have said, and I don't put a lot of stock in Churchill.
Yeah.
I mean, he was good for some one-liners, and you know, there was a lot. There's a lot about Churchill that most people don't know. The way he felt about brown people, for starters. But he said, any man, because he was a sexist too.
Yeah, I can extend this. I've had a lot of people read me the quote you're about to.
Yeah, say. Any man who in his youth is not a communist has no heart, and who in his youth and in his old age, or in his maturity, is not a capitalist has no head.
Yeah,
something like that.
Liberal. Yeah, but then, you know, at the same time, and then they said at 50, and I say, okay, well, at 70 or 80, if that same person hasn't connected the two, they're not a human being.
There you go. Now, I mean, I've been looking at a little bit of history, just because, you know, you use the Star Trek reference, and so, therefore, that means science, mm-hmm. or something, you know, based on speculative science. Oh, well, you know, his neural net's gone bad. Well, just fix it with the Anisflage. You know, the gadget solution to start to Next Generation was always the biggest rap on that.
Which are beginnings to doing that is all this nice stem cell technologies that have been coming out more and more and more. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Let's look at 1509 for a minute. In 1509, the world would have to wait another 5 years. And actually longer, for a guy named Nicholas Copernicus to put out a little pamphlet called Commentariolus, 6 pages handwritten, laying out his ideas for why it is that the Earth revolves around the sun. In 1509, most of the Western European community was content in the ignorance that the Earth and they on it were the literal dead center bullseye of the entire universe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It would be another more than 100 years before Galileo put out his hypotheses and was damn near killed by the church for it. So, you know, I fear it's one of those, the more things change, the more they stay the same kinds of things.
However, when, you know, Copernicus and Newton and all these guys, they, you know, every step that we've taken, we've understood how to swim a little better. The arrogance that I think comes in is when we think that we've got it all. I just think that instead of trying to get it all, like with, you know, come on, people, you can't divide by zero. You just cannot. I don't care how mathematically beautiful it looks, you can't do it. You just can't. It's one of these things. You can't divide by zero. But right now we're based on a lot of the last step, and I think the last step that we've taken in science and our understanding, you know, it's propelled us to a certain degree, but we need to get that next step to go so we can go a little bit further. I think the more we understand, you know, the more advanced of an organism we become, you know, the easier it'll be for us to solve a lot of the problems that we've discovered in this one. You know, with the pollutions and the this and the that and all this other stuff, you know, I mean, stem cells and blastocysts with rights and, I mean, all these things that we are arguing about right now, that, you know, obviously, you know, there's really only one way to go, and that's forward. You know, blastocysts are not human beings, and if we can sit here and generate, you know, stem cells, just the fact that we discovered that we can take skin cells, which is, you know, skin cells, and turn them back into, you know, stem cells, which, and then we can take a heart, strip it of all of its cells until it's just cartilage, then take that stem cells from someone's arm, put it in that tank. The stem cells attach itself to the cartilage, and the heart starts beating again. Then you could take basically get your very own, no rejection, drugs required, your own heart rebuilt. I mean, to sit here and think that we're at a stage now where we're at that, well, heck, if we don't kind of, and I know this is I know this one's a cliche, but, you know, sometimes you got to break a few eggs and make an omelet. You know, there has to be people that, you know, there has to be the people that go to the front of the, you know, rage and get their head cracked in with the truncheons and get shot with the rubber bullets and shot with the real bullets. If we don't get to this stage, if we don't do these things, then we never, as a whole, will move. You know, I think more and more we're realizing that the little Laputians have tied us down for over hundreds of years. And I think we're starting to realize that these ropes and where they are and what they are. I mean, you know, people talk a lot of stuff about Pakistan, but, you know, Pakistan is almost notoriously worldwide for its citizens being the most fully aware of its constitution and what it stands for. You know, and it may not be a constitution that you or I would certainly, you know, hold up, but at least they know it. And at least they demand that the government, you know, abides by it. You know, that's one reason Musharraf did what he did. Because if those people kind of would go, you know, completely into terminal velocity and freak out, like, in a sense, the Iranian people did. You know, I think, and that's why the mullah is now calling for, or whatever, the sheikh, or whatever he is, you know, he's the grand Ayatollah, yeah. I think he is now calling for an investigation of the election results because he knows damn well that he didn't put himself in power, that those people in the streets are the ones that put him in power. And I think one thing that, you know, in this country we're so comfortable and so, you know, so fat off the land and fat off our ideas of 16th decimal points and, you know, delicious foods, and we eat just the meat, no bones ever involved. People, you know, kids can grow up never realizing that the chicken tenders that they eat really come from an animal. You know, they just think they come in a box from a store. You know, I sit here and I look at this world that these things are not, you know, they're not coming to be like that anymore, Bob. I think people are waking up. I think we're starting to realize that, you know, organic food, and I've said this a few times, you know, we're getting the yields that we're getting. Well, organic food is not only that, it's more healthy for you. It's actually shown that organic milk has 70% more antioxidants in it than conventional milk, you know, where the animals are stressed out and so on and so forth. Well, even in the wintertime, it's 60% more antioxidants. Now, yeah, it costs more, but I'll tell you what, the price has come down on organic milk in my area by $2. It's now actually only $1.50 off of what the conventional milk is costing. Well, what's that going to mean? That's going to mean that we're going to start having more farmers start producing it, and because they can produce this bulk and does that, and then Bob in West Virginia gets this milk, and people are going to sit here and demand these things over and over on the smallest little levels to the highest levels. I mean, you look at the youth in Iran. That's the ones that are doing this. They don't want to see the revolution happen again. You know, these people are trying to maintain control. They're trying to maintain power. It's the same way that the petroagrochemical mafias and that, you know, lobby on Wall Street do the same thing and try to tell us that we need to eat total garbage. We need to be fat. We need to be stupid. We need to eat, you know, corn syrup and every other thing that we do, and you know, we need to take these stupid election results and we need to vote on machines and it goes bye-bye. We can't even, you know, verify and check this stuff.
I mean, you know, you remind me of something, Albert. Yesterday, as I mentioned, the kids are down at day camp.
Mm-hmm.
Agnes and I are experiencing a little taste of what semi-empty nest would mm-hmm. feel like. Because the grandbabies are still here. But our teenagers are off at camp. And so on the way down to drop them off in Charleston yesterday, Agnes said, look, what the heck? We never do this. Let's stop at McDonald's. Because coming down the hill, there's just we hadn't done lunch at the house here. We were in a hurry to get out the door. And I said, okay, so it's all there was. I mean, you know, until you get to Charleston and then, again, you know, some corporate restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to feed the kids. Well, I ate a double cheeseburger and some fries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding you, Albert, when I say that that I ate that because I don't eat McDonald's. I mean, I will literally be hungry and go buy McDonald's. Not go B-U-Y, but go B-Y.
Yeah, see you later.
Yeah. Bye, clown!
Yeah.
And I have not eaten McDonald's food in eons. I mean, I've had a cup of their coffee, maybe. The decaf. It is decent decaf. As long as you don't pour it on your genitals. It's really hot. I ate that double cheeseburger, you know, 99-cent menu, you know, bucking a dime menu, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And some fries. And we went on into Charleston, we dropped the youngins off, and on the way home, I looked at Agnes and I just said, I feel terrible. I feel awful. I feel nauseated. Yeah, granted, it was warm, but I had the windows down, and the air was blowing and everything.
Yeah, you feel that burger in your veins.
Oh, it was terrible, Albert. It was just awful.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing burger about it. To be honest, if I'm going to get a burger while I'm out, once in a while I'll pick up a Wendy's. And that doesn't make me feel near as awful as this made me feel yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I felt it in my veins. I felt it in my toenails. My hair felt that thing. For a moment there, I had this sort of Morgan Spurlock moment.
Uh huh.
You know, because in Super Size Me, both the movie and the book, I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Listen, this food makes you feel bad." And at the time, I wasn't eating a lot of it then either, but at the time I thought, you know, ah, come on. It's a stupid little burger. But it does. I can't imagine what it would be to do what he did and eat that garbage 3 meals a day for 30 days.
Seriously.
Ugh.
Well, think about people. There are tons of people that will eat it at least once a day. I mean, they'll eat it. I mean, what's the average used to be before the recession was like 26, 28 times a month. People would drive up to one of these places and eat. Now, I've eaten my fair share of fast food. It's everywhere in this country. And it's almost like they want it there. And in a sense, you know, on the one hand, you know, we are a multi-celled organism. At the very baseline, I mean, you sit there and you look at some of those documentaries regarding, you know, where they get that little tiny cameras into the human blood vessels, and you're looking at, how the hell does this know what to do? Well, part of that is what you put into it.
Okay, I don't feel so bad because I asked that question, too. How does this work? How does this know to do what it does?
Oh, yeah, Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. The way that the body and the way our vehicle here, you know, controls itself on its own is nuts. And then we have our own consciousness that's chasing all these other things and doing all these other things and running kids to day camp and all these other things. And you sit there and you're like, I'm hungry. That's quick. I'll eat that. Ugh.
Hate myself.
Then you're on the boom. And all right, I'll eat it again. And, you know, you think about what you do after you hammer yourself and you hammer yourself and you hammer yourself, you know, and after so many times, you know, well, hell, as long as that president gets me my burrito wraps and my Brondo and keeps out my balls on TV, I don't care. And, you know, and that's kind of where we're at on this front. But this is why I have hope, and I have, you know, that even on the most fundamental level, that our bodies are demanding organic foods. We want this, and we'll have it. We'll get it. There will not be conventional produce for my grandchildren. A, we're not going to have the chemical-based feedstock for it. And, you know, most importantly, no one would want to eat that crap anymore. And this is why I talked about food and olive oil that other time, and we talked about these things, is, you know, on the one hand, you know, the Iranians, they have their religion and their dogmas and their political crap and all that other stuff. But you even see, I've seen pictures of kids in Iran that I'm like, what? They got faceplates like the tribal wannabes here in the United States. They got big piercings and black hair all spiked to.
Oh, that photograph of the lovely young woman with the old pasty-faced doughy guy. And he was pretty close to white because, you know, the Aryans came down out of Northern Europe over the Caucasus. And some went to India, and some turned right and went to what is now Persia and the Medes. And just that pasty-faced, doughy old white man sitting there waving his cane at the young, beautiful woman wearing Western blue jeans and high-top canvas sneakers laying on the sidewalk. Their problem with, and I don't know what it sounds like in Farsi, mind you, Albert, but I could, there are phrases in any given language that you don't have to speak the language to be able to translate. Yes, you kids that are ruining the revolution, don't you know what we put up? I was at the embassy every day.
That picture.
With that cane, and you're pointing at her.
Yeah, no, that picture's beautiful. I think that's just, you know, that's symbolic for us, everybody. That's symbolic of the entire power. You know, we were talking just before, you know, when I was a little kid sitting in the bathtub, I remember asking the question, how many people are on the planet? And the answer I got was like 4.2 billion. Well, we have almost 7 billion now. I mean, there's a lot of young people on the planet right now, and I mean, you know, in the order of at least 4 billion. So when we sit here and look at this old aging population and their old, you know, hang the homosexual ways and, you know, all this other stuff, and repress women and do all these other things that, you know, mind you, the Muslims and the Jews and the Christians, they're all one big cult. I mean, they're just part one, part two, and part three. I mean, they're McCafe, Then make this, you know, the original, the next recipe, and now grilled chicken. That's what they are. So, but I think that pitch is symbolic of that. You know, they can sit there. Eventually, that old man's going to go away. That's that dust to dust, you know.
Yeah. Are you looking? I know you're in the chat room too, Albert. You see what Lottie just posted?
No, I'm actually.
Hey, you kids, get off my lawn.
Yeah, exactly. Get off my lawn. Well, you know. That's not, their world doesn't exist anymore. I mean, it's still around. There's still traces of it. You can still smell bits and pieces of it. But I don't think this is the world that we're going to,
I saw a tiny, I think I know what you're saying. I saw a little bird hopping around among the garbage and filth and the scattered spilled French fries and stuff on that Mickey D's parking lot yesterday. And hopping around on his two little legs with the little claws at the bottom, you know what I saw? I saw a little tiny dinosaur.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Birds are dinosaurs.
And I thought, You guys really had to downscale to survive, didn't you?
Yeah, you felt like surviving. You know, you were placed under environmental stresses that we probably still don't really understand. You know, we'll blame it on a meteor. Right now, I'm sitting about 3 feet from a baby robin boy, a male baby robin. He's just sitting there looking at me. I just had you brought up bird, little bird, and I'm sitting here about he's just still. He's just still. Now, anyhow, but yeah, they, you know, these animals were placed under, you know, intense stresses that, in a sense, you know, we have our own stresses that we've been putting ourselves under. And what did they do? They evolved. They grew up some feathers because it wasn't as warm anymore. They got smaller because maybe gravity wasn't as intense or was getting more intense. You know, we did all these, they did all these things, and now to this day, you know, I mean, it just, it took, you know how long it took people to realize this? That these birds that are flying, I remember when it, I was a kid. So I love dinosaurs. What kid doesn't love dinosaurs? But I remember back in those days that they didn't really put the connection between birds. Yeah, they said they had similar bone structure, and they had this and this and this and that, but they didn't really put the two and two together until they started finding the fossils in China in the 1990. I mean, I remember this. They found that, and they're like, whoa, there's the missing link of, there's the beginnings of the feathers and this and this and that. And what happened is what we have now. And you look at birds. Birds, you know, birds blow my mind. There are birds living in places that nothing lives in. Antarctica.
Up. In the chat room again, Science Daily, June 9th, 2009. Researchers at Oregon State University have made a fundamental new discovery about how birds breathe and have a lung capacity that allows for flight. And the finding means it's unlikely that birds descended from any known theropod dinosaurs.
That doesn't make sense to me.
But
there's too many other variables. There's the scales and the there's the whole bone structure and everything else like that. You know, to sit there and try to describe what, you know, the velociraptor of famous movies. I mean, it was the size of a chicken, not the size of a 6 foot scary thing. It was the size of a chicken.
Yeah, but they sure were cool in the movie though, weren't they?
When
they figured out the doorknobs. I'm sorry, I'm simple.
I totally forgot about that part. I had to think for a second, yeah. They were so... Well, but I just think that, you know, we sat here and see that life will evolve itself. There's, you know, even political, you know, when you say revolution, one of the main... The key component to the word is evolution. Not, you know, you just put the R, you know, R in front of it. That don't change it other than meaning that it needs to go. You know, I mean, and that it is happening.
I do find it interesting. This is a great quote from the article, though, that Lottie continues to post. This discovery probably means that birds evolved on a parallel path alongside dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not from dinosaurs, but just alongside them, starting that process before most dinosaur species even existed. That's kind of neat, too.
Oh, I guess that, no, absolutely. I mean, but we'll,
I mean, you go through, as we did several months back, you walk through the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, and I had read about giant ground sloths before.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, you know, the text tells you how tall, how big, how heavy. You know. But then I saw one put back together.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm just, pardon me, glad they're not here. I mean, you know, it's a giant ground sloth. That must mean it's idle and stupid. It's a sloth, after all.
Mm-hmm.
That sucker had a claw as long as my forearm.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have to be. He wouldn't have to be very active just to reach out and swat your ass and gut you like a fish. Just wouldn't. The big cats, the saber tooth, whatever. But these things were successful for a very long period of time. It's not like, you know, one day there was a giant ground sloth and the next day evolution said, yeah, it's not working. Let's try again.
No.
Let's go over to Australia and put a duck's bill on an otter.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and give it the tail of a beaver.
This is the egg and chicken argument. And the answer to the egg and chicken argument is whatever laid the egg, it wasn't a chicken. I mean, that's where it comes down to it. I mean, at some point, you know, that's why we see similarities between all these different, you know, we see, you know, there's, you know, like lung is one way, but this is another way. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of years. We're talking massive amounts of species throughout a wide range of, you know, of variables and, you know, completely different planets in, you know, 100, 200, 300 million years ago. If you look at today, you know, and in terms of human evolution, you know, what are we doing? One thing I'd like for everybody to go do if they get an opportunity here and there, you're bored, you don't know what to do, you feel like being intellectually stimulated, go to TED Talks or TED.com.
Oh, I love TED.
I mean, you know, if you want to sit here and really get into that, you know, on this cutting edge of our things, of what we're doing, and, you know, more full understanding, there's one person that will give you a piece of the puzzle, another piece that will, you know, another person, you know, and you just got to fit the pieces where they go. And I just, at least, you know, back 500, you know, we're talking, you know, 500 years ago, we didn't have anything like that. You know, 500 years ago, the only times that would happen was someone was being hung, drawn, and quartered. You know, so, you know, I think we're looking at, you know, we have bright days ahead of us as long as we don't try to go back to the old ways. But I don't think you'll probably be going back to McDonald's anytime soon.
No. No.
Yeah. You know, once you have real olive oil and you know what real olive oil is supposed to taste like, you won't go back to the rancid, congealed fat type. Once you know what this is, you know, I mean, once we know that we can take stem cells and rebuild hearts, once we know that, heck, you know, yeah, that was kind of painful, you know, maybe we should eat a little better so we don't have to get new hearts. Maybe we should do a little more exercise. You know, I think these things and these consciousness stresses that we have, you know, are also evolving us, you know, as a culture and as a human, as a species. You know, I just, you know, we're getting to this point of critical mass that we're going to really be, you know, and that's why it's so exciting to live during this time. Yeah, it's not as great as it should be or it could be, but we can make it that way. And, you know, I wish I could lament on why people don't go out and, you know, protest and so on and so forth. And probably, you know, a fair size of them, I'm myself included, you know, hey, we got family. I don't feel like getting shot, but that doesn't mean I'm ever going to support it. And when those people go out there and get shot and get this and get that, all that does is make everybody else who's more in the silent majority, that makes those people absolutely, you know, disagree with that kind of stuff and completely reject the doctrines that got us to think that this was a good idea in the first place. So, you know, and that's good news in Iran. I'm sure that some of our dollars are down there. Maybe instead of, you know, going and changing the regime to put in a Shah so we can control them and do those things that, you know,
But see, that leads to the next question, Albert. If on the odd chance we are over there fooling around with their elections, mm-hmm. you know, because I did see, apparently they found the purple ink. I saw pictures of women who had voted and had purple fingers and guys who had purple fingers. Apparently they found our ink purveyor.
Mm-hmm.
If we're over there messing with it, and again, speculation. Mm-hmm. Whose side are we messing on behalf of?
That is the question, isn't it?
I mean, if Mousavi is this alleged change agent
mm-hmm.
who would like to engage the world a little bit more, and apparently that was the reality that this youth vote projected onto him,
mm-hmm.
then do we want that? And frankly, does Israel want that? Or do they want somebody that they can hate real good so when they decide to drop bombs and grim death on that beautiful young woman getting the cane pointed at her lying as she's lying on the sidewalk? Do we want the old creepy guy Ahmadinejad, who is very, very good at running around and scaring the oil prices up? Is that the guy we want? I mean, this is a real paranoid little merry-go-round.
No, I don't even. I think that's dead on. I mean, I think that's absolutely dead on. You sit here and you're looking at the difference here is that our ayatollahs may want that. Maybe their ayatollahs want that, but the people don't. The people want Barack Obama more and more. You know, I think, and I don't think that our Ayatollahs or any Ayatollahs, Israeli Ayatollahs or any of these other people that, you know, these old men that, you know, with their sticks, I don't think that they're going to be able to suppress it. They're not, A, they're not going to be able to feed it because they don't have it, and they're not going to be able to suppress it. So, you know, yeah, they want war, but no one else does. You know, there's a party of a thousand people, and there's only, you know, two or three jackasses making trouble. So, you know, and I think that's what we're going to wind up having to remove them from their power, the party. Just kick them out, tell them, yeah, here, have a nice day, and see you later. You guys are, you know, your old days are over. And that's why we're seeing the people. It doesn't matter, you know, I hope that if we were messing around, we would be messing around to make Iran a better place. You know, that if you know that you broke a window, you would go and replace that window. You know, if you know that you caused something to be, you know, structurally, you know, defective, that you would go and fix that defect. I mean, we did cause this. I mean, the reason that Iran is sitting the way it is directly because of what we did. What was his name? Cookie, or what was his name? Roosevelt, right? Who was the guy that went over there, and the CIA guy to start that whole...
Yeah, oh yeah, Teddy Roosevelt's grandson.
Yeah, one of these, his name's Cookie or something like that. Anyway, you know, this guy goes over there and does all this damage, you know, and they had 20 years of their Shah, what have you, and eventually the people got to the point that they didn't want it, and then, you know, the Ayatollahs came in, and is that good for business? You know, who really started the Mujahideen anyway? Yeah, you know, we got all these other, you know, we do have all these little bumps and quirks, but, man, just like blowing yourself up for 72 virgins is not going to get you that. The same thing that these guys do to get what they want isn't going to get them that. You know, they're in a spider's web, and they're just entangling themselves.
I know, and the reason, the reason I started thinking along these incredibly paranoid lines, Albert, is because I caught some, you know, National Public Radio or some such report as I was going down the road the other day, and the person on the show was talking about how Mousavi is saying, we want to prove to the world that we are not seeking nuclear weapons. We just want nuclear power like other countries have. Well, you can't have a guy talking reasonable stuff like that. It's no fun to drop grim death on him. And the world might not like it real good if you did.
Yeah, start talk like the plowshares of political consciousness, like, you know,
you want a guy out there who's hollering stuff in a language that none of us can even figure out which word is, you know, bathroom, and you want him being all crazy so that somebody can come out and say, well, you know, he said he wants to push the Jews into the sea.
Oh, yeah.
When he didn't say that.
Well, when you're talking rational common sense of ways that we need to be, you know, in terms of nuclear, we just need some nuclear power. We realize oil's running out. When you start talking like that, how do you mistranslate that? You know, you can't mistranslate that. You know, so, yeah, I mean, that's probably why we wouldn't, you know, if the people who run the show, the military-industrial complex, are these guys that are, you know, they want to see, you know, what's his name in there, but, you know, they may very well not get that because I don't think the people want, you know, nobody wants. Nobody wants bombs dropped on their heads, especially people that were just involved with a war that killed millions of people just not even a freaking decade and a half ago, you know, or 2 decades ago. That's fully in their memory. Americans may not realize what it's like to have bombs dropping on your heads and gases being, you know, everything else like that. You know, so we might be a little detached from that, but they don't. And, you know, they were raised with those horror stories and,
Oh, I know, and I freely admit, Albert, that I am a very simple creature. There are lots and lots of photographs on this essay that David sent me. But damned if it's not those canvas sneakers and those blue jeans. I mean, it's so odd because the conservative old dudes, they're not wearing jeans. The young people, jeans. I mean, you can pick out. Let's see, in the crowd, blue jean, the marching people, you know, hands in the air with their purple fingers and stuff. Blue jeans, blue jeans, blue jeans, blue jeans.
Look at the people that are hung from the crane because they were homosexual.
Yeah.
Right? You ever seen those pictures?
Yeah.
All in jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see, cop, all black.
Mm.
But it says something to me. It says something to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it says something to me that I want it to say.
Wow.
But those jeans and those canvas high-top sneakers, they're Chuck Taylors, for Christ's sakes. They may be knockoffs, but they're Chuck Taylors.
Yep.
Maybe they're low cuts, but they look like high tops to me. But they just look like the same canvas basketball shoes that you and I and everybody in this country knows very, very well. And there are certain elements in this country that cannot afford to have the American people thinking of the Iranian people as terribly, terribly, terribly normal.
And similar to them.
Yeah, because it's hard to bomb somebody you think might be like you. And the signs in English in this, and the posters, by the way, the posters are for Mousavi are green, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
With his picture outlined in silhouetted sort of in white. And this one photograph of this huge crowd of protesters holding up the V for victory sign, the peace sign, whatever you want to call it. And in the middle of the photograph, oddly enough, in English, a sign that says, "Where is my vote?"
Interesting.
You know, where's mine from 9 years ago? Oops, down the memory hole.
Well, that's why a lot of times when I hear the way our leaders talk about other countries or the way that the media portrays or these talking heads they try to portray, you know, in terms of common knowledge or whatever, you know, I just see it as just projection. You know, yeah, right, they do their thing too, you know, they have their certain stupid laws and we certainly have, well, how do we say that they have stupid laws and we have the most amount of people in prison per capita on the planet? We put people in jail just because it makes money. You know, I mean, yeah, so I don't see a lot of difference. I don't see any difference between the Iranian and myself. His parents just happened to kind of, well, I mean, there's different spices. There's different nuances. There's different this and that. But regardless, the guys, you know, this is the whole race issue. This is the whole, you know, back to dinosaurs, whatever. You know, we all come from the same breed. We all come from the same line. Whatever laid the egg that became the human being, well, we're all from that egg. You know, so when we sit here and look at this, I don't want to even pretend that there's a difference. I know that's been naive, and I realize that, but there isn't. When you really look down on the fractal level of what we are, there is no difference. We're the same thing. You know, this is the same. It's Mecca Coke, but it's Coke. You know, and I see the young generation of the world stepping up and knowing what we need to get done. I see, you know, these generations are where the visionaries are going to come in. These are where the people that are going to start looking at different ways to approach old problems. And, you know, we're going to demand our vote. I don't think we're going to see another George Bush Supreme Court nonsense. I think the world's a lot different now. The people that grew up during that period of time.
Oh, no, I agree. We won't see that again, Albert.
No.
We will see, and you know, I'm guilty of something that I was talking about the other night in talking about 2000 and the election. I'm looking back at that at the same time that they're plotting the next one. The next one won't be done with a dummied up Supreme Court. They're already, they've been working since 2000 on how they do it the next time. We're kind of on to the electronic voting machines, so that means another level of cheating. Better lock, better burglar. Better burglar, better lock. Better lock, better burglar. Up, 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 up. And as a consequence, I don't, you know, I feel kind of bad that I don't do the election stories as much as, hit them as much as I used to. Because they're still out there.
Oh, yeah.
As such, you know, what's it going to be in 2012 when Jeb runs? Okay? And dig that. Just go mark it on your calendar. You know, it's June the 15th. Bob said that in 2012, the Republican nominee for president will be Jeb Bush.
Yep, I agree. However, I think we are going to make sure that Barack Obama does such a good job that they will barely get an honest showing, that there won't be any way that they could do it. I think we're going to see some real progress in a lot of areas that need it, and that are going to affect people's lives and make them look differently at the world and the way we are and the way we've been going on. You know, I think we're going to see, and I know people disagree, but I think we're going to see a universal health care system. I think we're going to
Maybe in 20 years. Maybe in 10.
I think marijuana is going to be legalized. I think it's just going to be one of those things that is going to just be thrown out with the trash. You want to profit off of my hobby, or you want to profit off of my ill fortune. You want to sit here and enrich yourself on, you know, medical conditions that, you know, are caused by the crap I eat and everything else like that, because there ain't no other choice. I mean, like this cannibalistic system of, you know, I don't think these things are going to fly. I just don't. I don't think we're going to see... I don't think the Republicans are going to even have enough ground underneath them to stand up there in the next election. I hope they run Jeb. I hope they do. He's a Bush. George Bush is the worst president in history of the United States. I mean, the Bush name is done. They're over. They're 22%. And then maybe they get another 10% when they get all Republican-y. But these people are so, they're over here showing themselves to be exactly what they say everyone else is. They're the ones going into the Holocaust museums and shooting up. And then they try to say that it's us. Oh, those people are liberal. That guy was a liberal. He hates the black people. I mean you see this desperation. They're running on complete empty. I don't care who they run. They could run Jesus. Not if Jesus would do it, which I doubt, but they could run Jesus and still lose. They've tried that ball. They've used that whole juice container up. There's nothing left. It's vinegar now. That's all they've got. That's all those guys got. They don't have any new ideas. They're just co-opting ideas that, you know, we talked about or that we've been doing. They're just copying us. And that's not going to be enough. It just isn't. It's not going to be, you know, a chemical-laden hamburger from McDonald's is not one of those burgers you get from a place like Culver's or any of that other stuff. It's just not. One's real, one's not. And, you know, I don't care how Republicans try to address any kind of energy issue. They're drill, baby, drill. That's their mindset. You know, so when they see something else working, when they see, you know, of course they're going to try to surf that wave, but... You know, quite in all honesty, they're just bad surfers when the waves get big. They just can't hack it. They're just not those types of people. You know, they want to sit and blame and tell everybody else and da-da-da-da-da and get their, you know, they want to make their money. And that's all they want. That's all they care about. You know, and I think our problems are going far beyond money. You know, the fact that our economy's collapsing, I think is going to show us that, you know, our problems are going to be things that we can't fix with money. You can't just print it and print it and print it and just off of nothing. And then we're going to sit here and eventually I think we're going to look.
No, there's a class of problems that can be fixed with money. There's a class of problems that cannot. For instance, you know, the problem that we have. Do you realize? Now, Barack Obama, president, not sure, addressed the AMA today. And I guess it was Friday evening when I was when I referred to the AMA as the world's most powerful union. The AMA has come out and flat out told the American people that we do not deserve a public option. Now, we're not even talking about single payer anymore. We're just talking about a public option. One little segment of insurance that that people can opt into who have been, you know, pre-existing conditioned out of having their miseries, their anguish, their fear, their illness, their sickness, and their pain prophetized. Just a little public option. Yeah, American Medical Association, no, you can't have that.
Yeah, well.
Now, so the president, not sure, goes and talks to him today. There was booing.
Really?
There was booing of the president of the United States. Booing, Albert. By doctors, booing.
Yeah.
Doctors. I mean, we're not talking about the hoi polloi. We're not talking about you and me. Ah, boo.
Yeah.
We're talking about upper crust doctors. Booing. Kind of breathtaking, really.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, they want their money. You know, a lot of, and this is the sad thing, you know, and I did hear a piece of it on National Petroleum Radio where he said that, you know, you don't go into being a doctor. You know, you go into a doctor to be a heal, to heal people, so we're going to let you try to do that. You know, and I think, you know, if you're going to boo a guy that's starting to talk like that, well, you're going to kind of show yourself to be why you really got into the game to begin with. You know, this is that's exactly the problem of the old paradigm. This is exactly the problem with money. You know, my wife's a nurse. Your wife, you know, right? Agnes, nurse, and everybody else in nursing, right? Well, people that go into nursing to, you know, help people get really frustrated with all the people that go into nursing to get that paycheck because they heard that, oh, we're going to have a nursing shortage. Oh, I can go into nursing. Nursing makes good money. Well, you know, the fact is, well, it's also, you know, there's costs, there's benefits and, you know, downfalls to both sides. And but if you're just going in for the money, if you're just going to be a doctor just so you can say I'm a doctor, well, what the hell good are you anyway? You know, there's a lot, I mean, the obstetrician we had with the twins was a moron, was an idiot, was a guy that was in the freaking game to make money and drive a Mercedes-Benz around. That's what he was in there for. He didn't care about her. He didn't give a crap about her. He didn't care about my children. And, in fact, he tried to make decisions, okay, that a lot of people would probably follow in terms of advice that could have caused my children to have severe developmental problems. He wanted to pull those kids out 3 weeks. 3 weeks too early, in my opinion. He wanted to do that just because it was convenient and he could fit it in on his blotter and because it would make money. And then, of course, 3 weeks early, they'd have to go to ICU. And you know how much that costs, right? And then, oh, after ICU, they'd have to maybe get a surgery. I had, you know, because they did pull them out a little early. They are twins, and my wife is small, so she could only carry them for so long, you know. And, well, there was one of my children. She had the valves, you know, the walls between the valves of the heart was, like, when they're in the womb, they're open, and they, you know, as they get to have to really start pumping, it closes those holes up. Well, she had one of those. Well, she had one of those, and she was born, yeah, she was a little early, but if I would have pulled her out when the doctor said to do it, I would have had to have my kid have open heart surgery. Thankfully, I didn't listen to the guy just because he's a doctor. You know what? I really don't care if someone's a doctor. If they're talking nonsense, they're talking nonsense. If someone's a physicist and they're talking nonsense, they're talking nonsense. You know, I'm.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's a physicist.
I don't care what you got in front of your name. You know, I mean, I wasn't all that impressed with school anyway. And most of the things that you want to learn now, you can just go read. Go read. Go listen to the lectures. All that stuff's there. That's the beauty of the Internet. You can educate yourself. But anyhow, so this doctor, you know, he wanted to do that. And, man, I couldn't tell you how wrong he was. If I would have listened to him, I would have been in big trouble. And, you know, doctors, I think we need to really address this situation as a culture. We need to really start looking at, you know, doctors kill 250,000 people per year with mistakes, okay? They do it. It's there, right? And so we need to take these guys off their pedestal. And if 250,000 people are getting killed from them being stupid or them being not paying attention, well, then they're not really there for the reason that they should be there. And I think that because of that, there's a lot of people that go into alternative situations or just say, I don't want to be part of that. I was a salesman at one time, and I don't want to be part of that game anymore. I think there's a lot of people that tune out of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of people that are going to start taking care of themselves. Granted, I'm probably not going to have my do it do-it-at-home stem cell kit for heart rebuilding, you know, by myself. But the fact is that there are doctors out there that really do care, and they really want to do those things. They don't mind, you know, only making $100,000 or $200,000. You know, I mean, if you think about it, as long as your life's comfortable and you can afford to do what you want to do, you know, I mean, if you want to take a vacation or you want to have a nice little house or you just have to have this type of bed and you have to, you know, and you're a doctor and whatever, and you certainly work hard, you certainly put in hours. But if you can do that and then care and really enjoy and get fulfillment out of what you're doing, does the money really count? Is that why you're doing it? Or is it you're doing it because you love it and you love to help people? You know what I mean? Like, if you want to be Patch Adams, you know, if you want to be that, that's a doctor. I trust that guy. I don't care if he's got a clown nose on. He cares about what he's doing. I want to eat food from the person that cares about what they're doing. Not the guy at McDonald's, you know, getting zits from all the grease splattering on his face who really hates this, but he wants a new bicycle, so he has to work at this stupid job he hates. That's another reason that food tastes like that. You know, I mean, we got to take this stuff into personal consideration for everything. Our health, what we eat, our political discourse, where we're going in terms of science. We need to really start looking at that stuff and, you know, take it into big picture. You know, sitting there and, you know, just because a doctor, they can boo all they want. It doesn't matter. Your services are required by us. We make you who you are. And you know what? $600, $800, $1,600 a month, plus deductible, plus the this, plus bankruptcies and divorces and heart attacks from the stress and everything else, cancers from the stress and all that. We don't want that anymore. That's the system, you know. Hell, you listen to the AMA used to be against unions and all that. The AMA can go sit and spin for all I care. That's not what makes me go see a doctor. I'm sorry. I know I got
no. I understand. Said it better than I could. Hey, Albert, I got to run along, brother. But this has been fun.
Hey. Always.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Take care now. Bye. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I decided to call in because you were talking about those photos.
Right.
I disagree with Albert when it comes to consciousness in America and waking up. I see this, I see it more like this. You know those pictures where someone tells you to look for something and you spend a long time? You got to find the shark. Do you see the shark? And you look at it for 45 minutes. And eventually you can find the shark. But here I see people say, well, no, you just got to keep searching for it. But they don't tell you what we're searching for. And I see a lot of, I see more of it being like the uncertainty of uncertainty. And when I see photos, Bob, of the Iran protest, I think to myself, we do have the same type of turmoil in a situation like Iran. It's just more to the background. It's more stealth. And I think to myself, if it continues to be stealth, are we ever going to have that type of movement and that type of awakening across the country? And I come up with a giant question mark. It's all uncertain now. When it comes to protests, when it comes to movements, when it comes to activism, I see an example. For example, I was going to send this to you. I believe I have. I don't know. Maybe I didn't. But the last message on a Twitter account called Tehran Election, the last two messages are, my father has a truck load of ballot boxes that were to be burned in the back of his truck. And then the next one is, I have to shut down for a bit. The police are looking for satellites. And that was from June 13th, 8:14 p.m. So, you know, my reaction when I read something like that, I'm wondering, number one, if it's real or legit, which it could be. He says his name is Abdul Azim Mohammed, and he's a student living in Tehran. I'm hoping that he comes back and gives us an update on something like this. But then there's the other part of me that's like, well, if he doesn't give me an update, if there's no picture, if there's no really background information, who is this really?
Yeah, and how is it intended to screw with your head?
Right. And I had this argument with my mother this afternoon when I called her, and I said, You see what the you see that protest? I said, can you conceive of five mile lines of people? And she's like, well, no, I can't conceive of that. She goes, but that he's a plant. And my first reaction was like, well, how do you know that? And she's a very pessimistic person when it comes to that. Maybe it has to do with age. I'm right down the middle. I don't know. And I think that's the way it's intended for all of us. And that's what I'm saying about beware, there's a Scorpion song, The Winds of Change. Because we don't have no idea what direction we're going in. We don't. We think we do. I mean, for example, you know, people talk about Obama, and Albert was talking about how Obama, we can bring Obama around to do what he wants to do, to make him do what we want him to do. Well, that's not, well, that may be the situation that happens. Well, it's not happening right now. I just sent you the latest ACLU report on the heavily tortured.
Yeah, I saw that.
Redacted dog. I don't know how to feel like. What am I supposed to feel like, Bob? Am I supposed to feel like, oh, wow, thanks for caring, for not telling me about this? You know, and then on the other side of the thing, here's the other thing, Bob. You know the thing on the Lindsey Ingram that I sent you?
Yeah.
In West Virginia?
Yeah.
Well, there's part of me that's like, well, I don't care if you redact something, because I pretty much know the horrors of the world that are happening, thanks to people like this who keep running their mouth. So, you know, I tend to think that, okay, if they're going to go in that direction, they're going to go in that direction. But I'm going to stay in this direction where if we're going to continue to have a clandestine operation and continue with more secrecy within secrecy, then we're not really having change. And people are just afraid to tell us that nothing is changing. And that's really a shame when you think about it.
Well, I looked at those redacted documents, and I looked at the transcript as well as the document itself.
Yeah.
And they're wiping out individual words.
Mm.
You know, they're not wiping out whole sentences. Now, they were in the wiping out paragraphs business. This latest one, it says stuff that's kind of hard to get your head around. This is apparently a hearing, and it's one of these military kangaroo courts, because the head of the person doing the question is referred to as president. So the president of the military tribunal, I am assuming.
Mm.
So did you make statements during that treatment? A lot. And what you said, was it correct? Was it incomplete, or was it not correct or untrue in any way? Couple of words gone. This first part, the second part, okay. What is the operation? I do not have specifics. I talk about open idea. So most of this here, the CIA, they admitted that I admitted to. Redaction. They start asking me again and again about this thing. I tell them no. Redaction. I was like this. I want to finish this. And something they not believe all what I do say in that time. Some they believe, some they not believe. I don't know what they need or not need. They only ask, I answer. In your previous statement, you were saying specific treatments. Can you describe a little bit more about what those treatments were?
Mm.
Big black streak. I understand. And they not give me chance all this black streak. So I understand that during this treatment, you said things to make them stop, and then those statements were actually untrue. Is that correct? Yes. Okay, regarding your statements that you've made here today at this tribunal session, have they been completely voluntary of your own free will? Yes.
You know how psychological that is, though? Because from our standpoint, it looks like, oh, it's one word. I don't know if they moved it paragraph to paragraph to paragraph and just put a little redundant.
No, you don't. You don't.
You don't. That's what I'm talking about. And this is what, if they're going to do this, and they're going to continue
doing it. And the thing is, what's interesting here is that apparently some of these words, the things that are redacted,
yeah.
They are phrases inside of brackets.
Oh.
You know what? Because you can see they've redacted it, but you can see the bottom of the bracket.
Hmm.
And you can see the top of the bracket.
Yeah,
so it's something in brackets, and usually in brackets is words like unintelligible or words like off the record.
Now,
okay?
Do you think it would be possible? Because I remember bringing this up about a hacker's trial, and they had issue of with redactment, but they were able to uncover the redactment with a few different versions of software. And I would just wonder if this is permanent redactment, or is there a chance that we can see what's underneath it, kind of, sort of, in that way. I don't know, but I'm just saying the wonders of technology may help us in this. I'm with you on this one, though, Bob. I don't agree that it's just one word. These guys have got more clever in their age. It's not. They're in the age of condensing down paragraphs to who knows, Bob, maybe even pages. Because they would do that. They would put a psyops on us like that, like you wouldn't believe, just to mess with us. Like, this guy thinks it's one word. We gonna show him. And yeah. Then it makes us look like whiners. Oh, you guys are whining about one word here, one word there. I see what you're saying, though. And it's, man, what do you do in a situation like that? Because when you come out and you start questioning this, and the immediate reaction is going to be, you're complaining about two words or three words here. That's because that's the illusion they're giving you.
Yeah, it looks like, wow, you know, they took out his name.
they David Copperfielded us.
No, yeah, because you know what? Yeah. If it's a bracket and inside it says the bracket, it says off the record.
Oh, yeah, that too.
That means that all kinds of, well, and we just didn't happen to record it because it was off the record.
Or garbled voices. I love when people do transcripts like that. In other words, it's like they either were too lazy or they didn't want people to know what was said.
No, it ain't lazy.
Yeah, I know. With something like this, it isn't. This is a problem. I wonder what the ACLU is going to do with something like this, because it's almost like this endless game.
Well, you wish they had the heart of a hacker.
Well, you know what? I'm sure if I send them an email and show them how someone uncovered a redactment and stuff, and could do it. But I'm thinking that maybe this is probably the chances are that. We're not going to get that, but I don't know. Maybe we can. Maybe we can uncover it. I would really like. It's, you know, curiosity has killed the cat, because they've really. Now I really want to see it, now that I've seen these documents with these black lines, and I really hope the ACLU does not be discouraged by something like this. I mean, they got the documents. I guess we can look at that as a small victory or something, but they didn't want to give them away anyways.
No, they had to be and see that's what this boils down to. This is the CIA asking that age-old question, you know, how many legions how many armies does the Pope command, or we have what did Andrew Jackson say? John Marshall has made his order, now let him enforce it. This is the CIA looking at the ACLU and the courts, okay, because this was court ordered to be released.
Mm-hmm.
This is the CIA looking at the court and saying, what are you going to do about it? Make me.
I'm.
Because we live, David, with this falsehood, with this. Blatantly untrue assumption that if a court orders it, well, you know, if you go into court, you're going to tell the truth. See, you're going to swear and everything. You know,
right.
Court. You know, the court stands as a bastion guarded, the last bastion guarding our freedom. Horse hockey. Horse hockey.
Yeah.
You know, if you consider, there are two, sometimes three, sometimes a dozen sides to any court case. But if you just take a simple case, like, for instance, you know, say it's a murder case. Well, the cop getting on the stand, he puts his hand in the air and swears to tell the truth. And the other side, the defense, their witnesses all put their hands in the air and swear to tell the truth. And at the end of the trial, the jury's main job is to figure out who was lying. Because somebody came into court and lied. Every time there is a court in session, somebody comes into court and lies, David.
Right. I'm beginning to wonder. I'm sure this is a rhetorical question on my part, probably. What do you think happens when someone does a testimony and they witness their friend being murdered by an interrogator? You think they'd redact that? I think there's a few instances of that if what Seymour Hersh is saying to be true, which I believe he is.
Oh, I don't think there's anything out there to suggest that Seymour Hersh has been anything but spot on correct the whole time.
Oh, I know, but what I'm saying is if that's the case and Seymour Hersh is 100% factual, then I wonder how many instances we have of, like, for example, a lot of this redactments, I'm seeing a lot of water torture. But I wonder now my cynical mind comes into play, I wonder what other forms of torture we have no idea about. I'm talking the kind of stuff like Hostel and Saw 4.
Oh, no. I know.
Yeah.
We think we know what's happened. We don't. Because even when we talk about waterboarding, we talk about it in a sterile sort of way where we discuss waterboarding, but we don't discuss that. Well, okay, we do here on the Horn. But generally, the totality of the circumstances are not discussed, where it's, you know, waterboarding 83 times in 31 days. And in between the 83 times in 31 days, there is freezing cold, soaking wet, dog cage, walling, attention slapping, the vicious attack dogs, you name it. And so we have no functioning comprehension, David, of what we mean when we talk about torture.
You know, it's that sliding scale that people don't want to talk about. They think if they call it, again, like you know how you said coal ash dumps, enhanced interrogations.
You mean like open toxic waste pit?
Yeah, open toxic waste pit. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're using words like that, they feel like, okay, so it's no longer torture, and Obama and his staff does that to a degree. There needs to be, I don't know how we get this openness, and I don't think we ever will get this kind of openness, but, you know, it begs the question, okay, so if that's the case, then I'm left with one conclusion, that torture is acceptable with this administration. By the way, have you seen that that Jeremy Scahill piece on Bill Moyers?
Don't think so, no.
I got to send that to you. Everyone has to watch that. That was amazing what he was saying on there about the issues of torture and why we shouldn't trust the Obama administration. He kind of spelled it out point to point. And you can see, like, Bill Moyers just looking incredulously like, I can't believe that an administration would do this, because that's where his mindset is. Is some people just can't get past that. They don't understand it. They can't conceive the unconceivable with something like that. And I think that's part of the problem. Where we look around and we say what we'd like for an administration to do and what we'd like to happen, and then because they do something nice or something that is perceived as nice or perceived as positive, we just don't look back and we don't hold accountable for that. And this is an issue where I don't care what anyone says. If you are an Obama supporter, if you are a Democrat supporter, if you are a supporter for any progressive cause, you cannot look back at this. You have to take a stance and say, wait a minute, and let the chips fall wherever they may. Whatever happens. You have to do that. That's your obligation as a person. And, you know, the fact that we don't have that, and the fact that when I go on any blogs, I won't name their names, so people will be upset when we name these blogs, and they say, well, we can't do that now. Well, we just can't do that. Well, what can we do? What can we do? We can't prosecute Cheney. That's out the window. We can't prosecute any of the Bush administration. They don't want to do that because we can't look backwards. Okay, if we can't look backwards, you know, it's times like this where you wish you had that DeLorean and the flux capacitor. I'll get that sports almanac for you, Bob. I promise. I'm left to, and I pose the question to you. What do you do? The only thing I can think of, and I'm sure everyone else thinks of the same thing, we just keep asking that question over and over. It's looping in our heads.
Well, look, you know, you talk about, Albert was talking about hopeful things, and along these lines, back on, Saturday.
Yeah.
The story hit. According to the New York Times, a federal judge in California has ruled that John Yoo will have to testify about accusations that his work led to the torture of a detainee. From the New York Times article, Judge White denied most elements of Mr. Yoo's motion and quoted a passage from the Federalist paper that in times of war, nations to be more safe, quote, at length become willing to run the risk of being less free. And this has to do with a case filed by Jose Padilla. His mind was reduced to mush, David, by virtue of what of the things that were done to him that were crafted by Jason Bibee and John Yoo. And so I guess in one case, although I'm sure that I fully expect the Obama administration to step in and say national security.
Yeah, I know. See, that's the problem with when you live in an extremely cynical world. This is the reality we're faced with.
But I also understand that even if you compel John Yoo to come in and testify, this is a guy who wrote a memo that authorizes torture, David. I'm not yelling at you, of course.
Yes, I understand.
This is a memo that authorizes torture. Who in his right mind, or hers, thinks that John Yoo is going to go into that federal district court in San Francisco and tell the truth?
Then you're left with the question.
Oh, and by the way, I screwed up. That was the Obama administration asking that the case be dismissed.
you see, this is the problem. When you when you're faced with a situation like this, so many people see it as a losing, lose-lose situation. They think that there's a win along down the line. You know, there comes a point where you have to realize, you have to ask yourself, do I at least get to keep my dignity and my pride and my convictions on what I believe in if we're going to lose everything? And that's the way I feel with an issue with torture. Because when we can't talk freely about it on TV, and we can't, and when we can't talk freely among ourselves on the radio, they won't let us, openly, with this kind of conversation that we're having right now, you know, it just begs the question, again, what do you do in a situation like this? Okay, so we can continue to talk about it. Maybe the next...
I know that being silent about it does no good.
Yes, being silent is no good. We can write that down. Do not be silent. And
write this one down too, David. Silence is acceptance.
Silence is acceptance, right? Maybe we need to get the a megaphone installed in every city and play 1984 in the mornings instead. Like how the Muslims have prayer. We'll just do a reading of 1984 everywhere. There's no answer for this because, again, it's the uncertainty of uncertainty. But what I do know is we can't just stare. We're looking at this in the face right now. We have the technology to look at these documents. We don't have to open up a newspaper. We don't have to wait for gotta watch CBS. They're going to show some documents tonight. No, they're right in front of us. They're downloadable. We can use them as wallpaper, for Christ's sake, if we choose. Then it begs the question: What do you do? Maybe the next step is maybe we all should call the ACLU and say, what is it we can do in a situation like this?
Give a donation to the ACLU, and we'll take care of everything.
Yeah, a donation and something like that. But I mean, there has to be a step there, or a plan for the master plan. For something like ACLU in a situation like this, I'm sure they knew this was coming. But my question is, we pretty much know, you, me, everyone, all the Horn listeners, that there was torture that probably happened. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some decapitations there. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some...
broom handle rapes?
Yeah, some rapes. I wouldn't be surprised if there was...
Yeah, because see, I remember when we went to war with Iraq, David, over the fact that Saddam Hussein's rape rooms.
Yeah.
We've got rape rooms, too.
We got rape rooms, they're in prisons, nightclubs. You name them.
We've got them in Guantanamo too, and Bagram and Abu Ghraib, and you know all and undisclosed CIA black sites.
That's the rendition sites.
You know, again, no conspiracy theory, no grand schemes. We rendered people to be tortured in Egypt, in Syria. People we don't even like. Countries we don't even like. Syria, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know, we'll like you a lot more. We'll like you a lot more if you'll just take this feller over there. He says he's a Canadian. But take this Canadian, take him over there and stick him in a cage and rape him with a broom handle every hour or so and see what he has to say, and we'll like you a lot more. Maybe we'll buy some dates from you.
Again, what do you do in a situation like that? I don't have an answer, but before I go, I would like to, because I know you probably have other calls, I would like to mention a documentary that I saw that was pretty powerful. It's a documentary called Anvil, and it's about a band from Canada, a heavy metal band from Canada, that never had a chance, and they've been trying 30 years to be rock stars. And they have these blue collar jobs, and they go across the country in a mismanaged tour, and it talks about their lives during the time of trying to be rock stars.
Spinal Tap only, horrifyingly real.
Oh, without a doubt. Horrifyingly real, but also a really, really, really optimistic type of movie, because it shows you the triumph of the spirit, of the perseverance, of what it means. It kind of gives you in the end of the film, no spoilers, it kind of gives you a new meaning of what success is. And the band members explain it in such beautiful terms. And they talk about it, and they just talk about what they're interested in, and they're great. There's so many great scenes in this film. It's probably at the top of my list for a documentary, Anvil. People, you should look out for it.
Spell it.
A-N-V-I-L.
Oh, Anvil.
Anvil, yeah.
Name of the band?
It's a band, and apparently they were on the tour. They were on the big tours. They were like the opening act of like stuff like Metallica, Guns N' Roses, Scorpions, and you know there are moments in the film where you get to see who the real rock stars are. I mean, not the real rock stars. I mean the real artists and the real musicians. Like there's a moment where one of the guys is trying to talk to one of the guitarists from the Scorpions, Michael Schenker, and Schenker is apparently just wants him out of the room, and you can tell it's like, I don't want to talk to you. And you know, it's the realization that you're going to come across that type of the real person, what they've become. But then there are people in the other bands who gave them respect and explained to them what they thought of their musicianship. And it's just really, really, I mean, for example, the guy has to, here's an example of what the guy has to deal with. The leader of the band works in a catering service, and he feeds homeless people. But he goes out on a European and a world tour and comes back and has to work at this job. Then he explains about the situation, about how people don't realize that most bands don't get their royalties. And this is a clear example of this, the theft that's going on worldwide when it comes to royalties. We don't see that on the news. But these people are living destitute, and it kind of gives you this example like, okay, this is what they're doing, and this is what they're continuing to do. And, you know, just to make an analogy, you know, this is what I hope, I hope the Horn can continue to persevere, no matter what obstacle is in front of it. And I hope people will continue to support it. And I hope people will start waking up to it and realize, what they have. And, the people who haven't called in, I urge you and implore you to call in as well, to get your say, because we don't know what direction you could take us in. And by us, I mean all of the Horn and everyone that's listening. You're all a part of it.
Very, very well said, David. Thank you.
Bob, I'm going to let you get into other callers. And, again, I guess what I'm left with for the theme for the torture, the situation with the revolution, the protests, it's the question I pose to everyone. What do you do when everything that you're trying or attempting to do doesn't seem to be working? Do you just keep on believing? Do you keep on, or do you reach out in other ways, and do you continue to expand and strategize and plot in different directions that you haven't before?
I've got bumper music already selected, David. Don't lead me off into some journey clip, okay?
don't stop believing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Don't make me do that. Do not make me play Journey at this audience.
You know, I have a song in mind that I'll have to send to you this week that I think you'll like. It's by Andrew Bird. It's called Cynthian Empires.
I don't know
if you've ever heard of it.
I'll give it a listen. Right now, I've got something a little more redneck in mind.
Oh, okay, I'll let you get to that song then. Bob, as always, it's been nice talking to you.
Oh, it's always good, David. You take care, my friend.
Sorry I haven't called in lately, but I've been listening up a storm, selling, mailing, that kind of thing. So hopefully I'll talk to you soon, and hopefully we can, you know what? I'm thinking of calling the ACLU, and maybe I'll report to you back what they say after I...
Do, please. I think it would be interesting.
...specifics of what we're talking about. And maybe what I can do is explain...
But look at that PDF and tell me if those aren't the outside edges of brackets.
You know what? I'm going to mention that to them as well, if they think they're brackets. And see what they say. I'm sure they'll take a look at it, and we'll have another questions among questions among questions.
Because I just looked at the typeface on the document,
yeah.
And I can't think of another letter in that typeface that looks like a left-pointing bracket that isn't a left-pointing bracket.
You know, that's a spot-on observation.
I mean, you could say that maybe the right-pointing bracket, that's not a bracket, that's an F.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reverse F. I mean,
you know,
the T points to the left, but it also points to the right, so that would be sticking out. It's brackets.
I'm going to call them, and I'm going to ask them what they think. What's the next step? What do you guys do in a situation where... You probably have paragraphs that are redacted only to make it look like one word, and see what they say to that, and ask them what is it specifically we can do, or what is it you think we can do.
Let's see. I was just trying to think what would appear in brackets off the record, or here's another one that appears in brackets sometimes, expletive. It makes me kind of wonder if that would work with that. Let's do a little experiment.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Because
an expletive, it just says expletive because that's where the guy is asked, for instance, were you tortured? And he says, F!
Yeah.
Okay, or, God damn it!
Or he went on a rant. Was I tortured?
Right.
Well, let me tell you something about torture, my friend.
I got your torture.
Yeah, I got your torture right here.
But I mean, just looking at it, so most of this here, the CIA, they admitted that I admitted too.
Yeah.
They start asking me again and again about this thing. I tell them no, dumbass. I was like this. I was like, I want to fit. Okay. In your previous statement, you were saying specific treatments. Can you describe a little bit more about what those treatments were? Mother! Okay, but no, I mean, there's one. That's got to be a bracket. Yeah, there's no way it's not a bracket. There's nothing to look. You go and look. It's the page that begins. So did you make so you did make statements during that treatment? Okay, it's that page, David.
Uh huh.
Go and look down at the line that says, "And they not give me chance all this comma," and you tell me that the thing they missed with the marker is not a bracket. Now, I know I'm probably being overly analytical.
No, probably.
I need to go listen to some Pink Floyd backwards or something. But
you're probably right. But I don't know what to say at a point like this. All I can say is hold on to your loved ones. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
I know. It's been bumpy for a while.
Oh, I'm saying it's probably going to get even bumpier with these kind of continuing tricks that we have on this stealth, undemocracy, unconstitutional country that we're inhabiting day by day. I can only imagine. Can you imagine if none of this is... Simple question before we leave. Can you imagine what this country will be like in 2 or 3 years if none of this is confronted?
Somewhere along the way it has to be. David, we'll talk soon.
All right, later.
Bye now. Where is this show going? It's 9 minutes after 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. You want to get in and be part of this? I welcome you to. In the meantime, we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls or a couple of things that I really think we need to get to along the way as well. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. 877-443-2366 is the number. Jump in. The conversation's fine.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. UAW workers walk off the job at a helicopter plant. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers represented by the United Auto Workers at a Bell Helicopter Textronic Corporate plant in Texas walked off the job on Monday. Nearly 2,500 workers are represented by the UAW at the plant, and they are on strike to protest a contract proposal that increases medical costs and would outsource work for janitors at the plant. If adopted, the contract could have cost 44 workers who handle janitorial duties at the plant their jobs. The workers voted 1,177 to 680 Sunday against the new contract proposal. However, the company says those janitors have received new job classifications with higher pay that would have prevented them from being eliminated. The contract would have provided a $4,500 bonus and 3% wage increases in 2010 and 2011. The company issued a statement saying they expect to continue negotiations until a satisfactory solution is reached.
Catholic Charities USA says unprecedented numbers of individuals and families are coming to their agencies nationwide for food, housing, and health care. Father Larry Snyder is president of Catholic Charities USA. He's calling on political officials at every level to make prudent decisions that will minimize adverse effects on those who have the least in our society. He says in many cases, governments at the state, county, and local levels are trying to balance their budgets on the backs of those who have the least. Father Snyder says the social safety net must be preserved and we must create an economy that benefits everyone.
And that's where we need to correct the system, to make sure that everyone is benefiting from our economic policies here. Ultimately, it's about building a nation where the American dream is still a reality and not just a myth.
The Boston Newspaper Guild said it planned to present an offer of resolution to Boston Globe management on Monday. The Globe imposed a 23% pay cut on Guild members Sunday. The Globe had said that the Monday meeting was intended to be limited to discussing how to implement the pay cut. The Globe says it needs $20 million in concessions from its unions to stay in business. Several other unions have already approved $10 million in concessions at the newspaper. Cessna Aircraft in Wichita is sending layoff notices Thursday to the first of 1,600 workers. In April, Cessna announced 2,300 layoffs. The latest job cuts bring the total layoffs to 6,900 since November, half of Cessna's workforce. Colorado grocery workers are finally voting on a new five-year contract. The King Soopers workers are voting now through Wednesday after weeks of disagreements over pensions, a new two-tier wage proposal, fewer benefits for new employees, and raises. The workers are represented by United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 7, and their previous contract expired on May 7th. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Yeah, that's enough of that. I didn't have the heart to subject you to Don't Stop Believing. But that's bad enough. That's the radio form of deliberate cruelty playing Journey at you. I should be ashamed of myself. But anyway, we're back about 20 minutes past the hour, and probably a good 35 minutes worth of conversation left, but a couple of things to hit. Not the least of which is, of course, the email. Our buddy William writes in and says, "Now, it may be because I'm 60, and I'm still hearing the same issues as I did 50 years ago. All we've done through the decades is add more issues to an already insane and long list. At one time, these issues would have been much easier to repair than they are now. Yet, as always, they get pushed aside by some distraction, and most all distractions are deliberate and serve their purpose." I will interrupt William's email just long enough to share with you some of the leading headlines from CNN this evening. Captain America, not so dead. Mandy Moore makes new name for herself. Mourning the death of single girl friendship. And puppy accidentally flushed down toilet. I think you get William's point. Now, since advertising, he says, has become a computer-generated form of high-tech brainwashing to the point of high art, they are always one step ahead of the unwary viewer. All it takes is to turn off a switch, yet this gesture has become more difficult for many than for me to quit smoking. I don't think we're moving forward into any sort of known territory. I think we're moving into unknown ground and moving barely quick enough to keep ahead of the stream of boiling lava. We are not going to steer Obama. We did not hold the Democrats' feet to the fire or change their set course after 2006 with 6406 slogans and banners. This was swept right down the rabbit hole and is now covered in cooled lava, sealed off, and forgotten. But at that time, the hopes were high and the hands were waving, and this is no different than now. Other than more damage has been piled in the way of the people who were running ahead of the steaming stream, and more damage forgotten. It's now don't look back. People don't learn unless they go back and fix the mistakes. Never by moving forward, leaping over the trail of broken promises and outright lies. Measure twice. Cut once. Money can really be replaced by motivation, where the words mean the same thing. This is how we've progressed. That's the sad part that leaves me feeling ill. Money can really be replaced by motivation, where the words mean the same thing. Progress. Thanks, William. Now, I understand what he's getting at. I know you do, too. Meanwhile, from the distraction department, Fox News poll, do you think Obama is still sneaking cigarettes at the White House? Jesus. No, it really was a Fox News poll. It was released on June the 11th. You think Obama is still sneaking cigarettes at the White House? Sneaking? Sneaking cigarette? Good God. I've seen some mention in the chat room about an article that, and I also received word of it in the email, of an article over at Salon that talks about the fact that the military really does have a neo-Nazi problem. If you go to Dave Nyhart's post over at Crooks and Liars, you'll see a photograph of Sean Stewart, Iraq war veteran, taken at a 2006 neo-Nazi rally in Olympia, Washington. I mean, you know, brown shirt, red armband, Hakenkreuz, you know, the works. Dave Nyhart, who you may have heard on the show back when we were in Washington, D.C., great guy. He's done a hell of a job following this kind of stuff. Writes, remember how the right-wingers screamed and yelled about that Homeland Security bulletin, which indicated that white supremacists might be recruiting Iraq war veterans or pushing recruitment within military ranks? Well, Matt Kennard at Salon, Dave writes, has an eye-opening report that should be permanently shut that should permanently shut up the right-wing whining because it demonstrates clearly the broad nature of the problem. Namely, not only are veterans being actively recruited, but neo-Nazis and other radicals are actively joining up to fight, and the military is turning a blind eye to it. Nyhart quotes a couple of paragraphs from the piece. Since the launch of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the U.S. military has struggled to recruit and re-enlist troops. As the conflicts have dragged on, the military has loosened regulations, issuing moral waivers in many cases, allowing even those with criminal records to join up. Veterans suffering post-traumatic stress disorder have been ordered back to the Middle East for second and third tours of duty. Read the article. It's at Salon. It is by Matt Kennard. It is worth your time. It is worth your effort. And just from that historical perspective, the department that I'm so overly fond of, anybody here remember where Hitler came from? Well, sure, a beer hall. No. I was a failed painter in Austria. No. No, he was in the Kaiser's military at the end of World War I when propagandists, even as the German army was failing and losing, had already created the meme, we could have won if only the politicians hadn't tied our hands. Anybody heard that before? Ever heard a right-wing Vietnam vet say that? Sure you have. Will we hear that some more when we finally wise up and get the hell out of Iraq and Afghanistan? Sure we will. We could have won. Damn liberals and hippies are spitting everywhere. They kept us from winning. You can't win wars that are unjustly begun. It's that simple. You start a war, odds are, you lose it. Because the universe frowns on war starting. It just does. But Hitler came from the Kaiser's military. It was, and it was later, sitting in a prison cell where he wrote the incomprehensible German involved in trying to read Mein Kampf. My struggle. And now, they ain't just in our military. They're changing the shape of our military. Really, really, and for true. And a couple of other things. Mainly because they're, well, infuriating. And they fit, they're sort of, oh, I don't know, they're, if you were building a hand of cards, you could make, this would be two cards in a nice little flush. This comes from Columbia, South Carolina. Well, of course. And it quotes a newspaper article from WIS-TV that says the following. A state Republican activist, remember South Carolina, a state Republican activist has admitted to and apologized for calling a gorilla that escaped from the Riverbanks Zoo Friday an ancestor of First Lady Michelle Obama. A screen capture of the comment made on the internet site Facebook was obtained by FITS News, the website of South Carolina Politico Will Folks. The image shows a post by an aide to State Attorney General Henry McMaster describing Friday morning's gorilla escape at Columbia's Riverbanks Zoo. Longtime South Carolina GOP activist and former state Senate candidate Rusty DePass. Come on. That can't be. Yeah, I guess it is. The real name. It sounds like something pornographic, though, doesn't it? Rusty DePass responded with the comment, I'm sure it's just one of Michelle's ancestors, probably a harmless. And then came back with the classic Republican non-apology apology. Oh, I'm sorry if anybody was offended. And then he said, well, the comment was hers, not mine. He tried to claim that Michelle Obama had made statements in the media saying we're all descendants of apes. See, this is a pasty-faced, doughy white guy twofer. On the one hand, you can make the African person gorilla reference, and then you can use it as a twofer, like I said, to claim that she's advocating that evolution, which anybody of good, decent Christian upbringing knows is a heresy of the devil. Right? Yeah. Mother. Rusty DePass. I can't wait for him to get caught in the men's room somewhere. When you got a name like Rusty DePass, you're going to get caught in a men's room somewhere. You just are. And then, lest it be presumed that we are going to leaning too hard on South Carolina these days, let us go west by a few miles to one of my favorite cities, Nashville. A blog called The Political Carnival. ThePoliticalCarnival.blogspot.com. Tennessee Republican staffer caught forwarding racist picture. Comes from, the picture was forwarded by a Tennessee legislative staffer, and it was forwarded to well-known West Tennessee blogger Newscoma, a photograph that had been sent from another staffer. In the email, it is delineated a historical keepsake photo. For any of you who want to see this, I am posting the link in the chat room now. A historical keepsake photo. And, you know, we had a funeral home around here who every year put out the American President's Calendar. And there they are, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Quincy Adams, Jackson, Van Buren, Tyler? William Henry Harrison. Not sure. No, not sure is down there's a ways. You know how it is. That beautiful portrait of Kennedy with his arms crossed, leaning against a desk, with his head lowered. Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, H.W., Bill Clinton, W., and in the far lower right-hand corner, a space that is solid black with two big buggy eyeballs staring out. Newscoma got it. The Political Carnival blog says, it's supposed to be an historical keepsake photo of the president's, but no picture of President Obama, just a spook. Hey, there's another one of those code words. Now, where in the hell did this come from? The originator of the picture is a woman by the name of Sherry Goforth. We need to get her together with Rusty DePass. Goforth DePass. They could open a PR firm. The pass go forth. Whatever. She's executive assistant for Republican State Senator Diane Black of, I don't know if a certain member of our audience is listening or not, Gallatin! Republican state senator sending it. And, you know, there's nothing in here to say that she created it. She's probably not creative enough to come up with something like this. There is an entire right-wing hate machine, as we have discussed on a number of occasions, that does nothing but spew this filth. The author of this blog, who goes by the name of Gotta Laugh, said not only did Sherry Goforth refuse to apologize, what she did do was claim that she had simply sent it from the wrong email address. In other words, not sorry that she sent out a blatantly racist email, only sorry that she got caught. Who's Senator Diane Black of Gallatin? Well, among other things, she authored a... and was the primary Senate sponsor of SJR 127 in Tennessee, described as a trigger amendment passed this year that, if passed in one or more legislative vote and by a ballot initiative, will allow abortion to quickly be banned in Tennessee should Roe v. Wade ever be overturned. She's canceled meetings with LGBT activists from her own district. Rusty to pass and Sherry go forth. Two peas in a pod, to say the least. You know, I mentioned the Salon article, and I really do hope you will take a read. There is a downside. The downside being horrors such as what we have witnessed and experienced and grieved in the last week in terms of what happened at the Holocaust Museum. And it happened Friday, and I didn't get to it. But Erich von Brunn, the son of James von Brunn, who was the murderer in the Holocaust Museum shooting, issued a statement. And it was kindly provided to me by our buddy Maura. And I can't imagine the pain that Erich von Brunn is living. This is his statement. My father's beliefs have been a constant source of verbal and mental abuse my family has had to suffer with for many years. His views consumed him, and in so doing, not only destroyed his life, but destroyed our family and ruined our lives as well. For a long time, I believed this was our family's cross to bear. Now it is not only my family's lives that are in shambles, but those who were directly affected by his actions, especially the family of Mr. Johns, who bravely sacrificed his life to stop my father. Imagine having to talk about your father in these terms. I cannot express enough how deeply sorry I am it was Mr. Johns and not my father who lost their life Wednesday. It was unjustified and unfair that he died, and while my condolences could never begin to offer appeasement, they, along with my remorse, was all I have to give. While my father had every right to believe what he did, by imposing those beliefs on others, he robbed them of their free will. His actions have taken opportunities away from many people and forced decisions not expected nor warranted to be made that otherwise would not have been necessary. For the extremists who believe my father is a hero, it is imperative you understand that what he did was an act of cowardice. To physically force your beliefs onto others with violence is not brave, but bullying. Doing so only serves to prove how weak those beliefs are. It is simply desperation, reminiscent of a temper tantrum when a child cannot get his way. Violence is a cop-out, an easy answer for an ignorant problem. His actions have undermined your movement and strengthened the resistance against your cause. He should not be remembered as a brave man or a hero, but a coward, unable to come to grips with the fact he threw his and his family's lives away for an ideology that fostered sadness and anguish. I apologize to friends and family who have been inundated with the media blitzkrieg you have been suffering through. While I understand it is the media's job to report as much as possible, I can only hope they have the restraint to curb the sensationalism they have thus far been reliant upon. Keep hoping. Again, my father's actions are unforgivable. I do not expect, nor will I accept, forgiveness for what he has done. I realize there is nothing positive to be taken from this incident. It is empowering, however, to know our country's resistance and intolerance for such acts of hatred has been bolstered in the face of this tragedy. I humbly ask you, respect our privacy and allow us to grieve and attempt to rebuild our family, along with the other families affected by what has happened. Signed, Erich von Brunn. As Maura noted in her note to me, thank God the apple can fall far from the tree. I would not want to be inside Erich von Brunn's head. But that's the nature of these right-wing monsters. and they're everywhere. And I don't know that I agree with Eric von Braun's assertion that we are stronger for having seen this, because it is all over our culture. And I don't know to what degree we can resist these monstrosities. You want another one? Yeah, I got another one. Let's go to Arizona. Three people have been arrested in connection with last month's deadly double homicide in Arivaca that left a 9-year-old and her father dead. One of the people arrested for the homicide is the National Executive Director of the Minuteman American Defense Group. Minuteman American Defense, MAD. A group known for patrolling the border. Claims to be dedicated to defending America's borders. Jason Eugene, couldn't make this up, Bush, age 38, and Shauna Ford, 42, and Albert Robert Gaziola, 43, were all taken into custody and charged in connection with the murders of 29-year-old Raul Flores and 8-year-old Brisenia Flores. Here's how it happened. Bush, Ford, and Gaziola broke into the Flores family's home a little bit after midnight on May the 30th. The mother, the father, and the daughter were all home. They then shot all three members of the family. They killed the daddy, and they killed his precious baby girl. And then fled the scene. The National Executive Director of MAD, Minuteman American Defense, Jason Eugene Bush, is alleged by the Pima County, Arizona Sheriff's Department as being the shooter in all three of the cases. They are also, of course, very much dedicated teabaggers. They walk among us. And you don't know who they are. And no matter how many guns you buy, no matter how many pistols you pack, you will never be ready when they come. Because their primary weapon is not a firearm or a knife or a ball bat. Their primary weapon is fear. And terror. And just not knowing where one of these evil, sane conservatives will strike next is enough to silence us, some of us, is enough to make us be uncomfortable in our own homes, our own skins, in our communities, in our comings and goings, in our daily doings and dealings, because we simply never know when a member of the terrorist right is going to choose one of us. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, this is Alan.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, okay?
Yeah, I got you.
I'm on the internet telephone.
Oh, excellent.
Thought I'd try that for a while, see if I could save some money.
Not a bad idea.
Well, I was talking to a right-winger the other day, and he was trying to tell me that people who go to the hospital and do not have insurance, that the money that the hospital has put out does not get passed on to the national debt. Is that true or not? Do you know?
Well, I'm not sure based on how you're describing it. What it gets passed on to is everybody who does pay. Uninsured treatment in hospitals is part of the reason that other costs are higher. If you go in, let's say you're independently wealthy, Alan. You're independently wealthy and you go in and you get a broken finger set. Well, it's going to cost you more to get paying cash. It'll cost you more to get your finger set than it would if you had insurance. And I don't mean because you've got insurance. I mean because those costs are passed on to the cash paying called self-insured or primary payers.
Well, I found out like 20 years, 15 years ago that I've been told that if you go to a hospital or to the emergency room, they will charge you more if you do not have insurance.
Yes.
And if you didn't have insurance.
Absolutely.
They charge an insurance.
Absolutely.
I guess I would think in some way that if you don't have insurance and you do not pay, that some way that's going to be passed on to the national debt. Because probably in the way that the hospital is going to wipe that off on their taxes, I would think other would just do it. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it does find its way to the national debt because to a certain extent, hospitals have charity funds, which they then use to cover these costs for people who can't afford care. But underlying all of this, Alan, is another issue, and that is when you are uninsured and when you are poor and you can't just go to the doctor, you use the emergency room, and there's that word, emergency, for primary care and urgent care, which is not what it was designed for. You know, you might have an ugly bruise. Well, you don't have a primary care physician, so you go and get it seen at the emergency room.
Uh-huh.
Whereas,
yeah.
And that impedes the system. Whereas if you had, you know, if we had universal health care, that same person could go to their primary care physician and they could look and say, well, you know, that's pretty deep one, we got to keep an eye on it. Or you know, do something for it.
And this Rodman that I was talking to, he kept saying that he does not believe in socialized medicine. Then I told him about single payer health care, and he acted like he was. Like he was an expert in the field of medical, and he didn't know what single payer health care was.
And he's not supposed to. And if he was a right winger, even if he did know what single payer or universal health care was, I'm sure he would be quite convinced it was communism.
Now, when I was trying to explain to him, he sounded like he was pretty interested in it. Because he was complaining about socialized medicine, but he wanted to get into the military. It's just socialism. So he wants to get his paycheck from socialism. Ironic.
Yeah, the irony, yeah, there's no small amount of it.
Yeah, finally I just told him, I said there's people like me that be paying for your paycheck. Yeah. Well, that guy you were talking about, that shooter in the Holocaust Museum,
yeah.
I was thinking that he probably has had a real bad case of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. It's probably pretty bad mentally off. Like a lot of them I ran across.
We don't really know anything along those lines, but that's entirely possible.
Uh-huh.
We do know, however, that the man who was shot and killed was a union man, Alan, and that they had begged and begged and begged and begged for bulletproof vests. The union had.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry, no bulletproof vest. So when no bulletproof vest for the, even though the union knows it would be safer, no bulletproof vest for him for when the Nazi comes in and starts shooting.
I heard he had like a, was that a 22 rifle that he had?
I'm not sure what caliber it was. It was, I mean, it was a long gun, wasn't it?
I don't, but a 22 rifle doesn't seem very powerful, but if you get those expanding bullets, even with a 22 rifle, you could do some pretty good damage. So I remember shooting those, the kind of bullets when I was a kid, and they just tear up an aluminum can.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I that's what I learned to shoot on. Little 22 long rifle. I'm thinking it was a rimfire cartridge. Yeah. And by the way, this in from our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest. She says, currently when someone goes to the emergency room for care and they can't pay their bill, the bill's paid by the U.S. government. Universal health care will end this practice, and it's a savings. So there, there's the answer to your question.
Probably so.
It is a function of the national debt.
So body care as it is, but the way it is now, the thing that they own for us to tackle their health care. And if they have like some kind of health care plan that Obama might be talking about, we could save people's livelihoods and set people's houses and cars and have a better quality of life.
Very likely, very likely. Well, good hearing from you, Alan, and glad to know the internet phone's working. It's a little dodgy, but it'll get better.
Okay, thank you.
All right, where are you?
I'm in Elizabethtown, New Jersey. I'm headed to Jackson, Michigan. I'm in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. I'm heading to Jackson, Michigan, the hometown of the Republican Party, the birthplace of the Republican Party.
I thought that was in Wisconsin.
I think. Well, I might be wrong there.
Jackson's the home of something, and I also know that somewhere nearby is a maximum security Michigan State Penitentiary.
Well, I'm hauling one of the biggest magnets there is, the most powerful magnets there is. So, time to keep my change in my pocket.
don't put one of those choke collars on Miss Lula.
Yeah, she gets thrown to the back of the van.
She wouldn't like it. She wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
And I know that Jackson, Michigan's home to that state prison because I remember I attended a very dear friend's wedding there once upon a time. And there at least were signs out on the interstate that said, "Do not pick up hitchhikers, prison nearby."
Okay. Well, I'll look out for hitchhikers then.
Yeah, no hitchhikers for you, Alan.
Okay.
All right, drive safely, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. I always have to ask Alan where he is because you never know where Alan's going to be. So it's about 7 minutes before the hour, and I don't know, what I said earlier. It turns out that the security officers working at the Holocaust Museum are all members of the International Union Security Police and Fire Professionals of America, otherwise known as the SPFPA. Their president is David Hickey. And the officers working at the museum were contracted by Wackenhut Services. He says the security personnel are extensively trained. This from a Think Progress article. Washington, D.C. SPFPA rep Asana Faye. The union has been begging Wackenhut for the company to issue protective vests for its workers. And not just because, you know, hey, yeah, we want bulletproof vests too. We're important. No. You see, just like was noted in the warning about right-wing extremism, the museum's security officers have experienced a significant uptick in threats against their lives and anti-Semitic remarks. By, you know, the loyal right wing. Asana Faye, or Faya, I don't know, said, I hammered this in our negotiations 2 years ago because of how sensitive that museum is. Sorry. Sorry. No bulletproof vests for when the rampaging Nazi comes to call. Wow. Wow. So that's where we will end it this evening. Thank you for making Monday a very, very good beginning of our week. I'm not entirely certain. We may have a local meeting tomorrow evening of our group that's continuing to press against this god-awful mountaintop removal nightmare near here. If so, I'll do an hour and maybe go to the meeting and try to come back and do another hour. But at least, at the very least, I should be doing an hour tomorrow evening. It is now officially the 15th day of June. We are halfway through June. And July is looking grimmer by the moment. You know, it's a terrible thing when you sit around and you think about what you'll lose. When I sit around and think about what I will lose if the horn goes dark. Not hearing from Albert, not hearing from Alan or Juanita. Not hearing from Preston or Kate. Or any of the many myriad people who have made my life so much better. No more emails. No more chat room. And that just shakes me to my core. And selfishly, it does so for me. But I know, based on what I hear from you, that it shakes you as well. Thank you to folks who did step up in the last couple of days as you were able. We are trying like crazy and will not give up until this whole thing gets unplugged. But it's the 15th of June, and we are nowhere near where we ought to be on the 15th of June. We'll get through June. July's looking mighty dodgy. If you're able and you can help, I say thanks. Thanks to also Ben Birch, John Fox, and Peter Godbold, chat room moderators Lottie and Sue, News Ninjas Gene and Susan, and Blogger Texas Betsy. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Monday at last. As Mark Twain said in The Diary of Adam and Eve, Sunday pulled through. I got to tell you, it's a little odd around here. I feel a little lost back here in the studio. Horn intern junior grade, Ferg, is off at a couple of days' worth of day camp. Won't be back until tomorrow. Kind of odd not to have him in here. Talking when Dad has the mic open, asking questions, learning how to be a producer at some point, I hope. Of course, mostly what I get is, Dad, I want my own show. Not yet, son. Not yet. No. Your old man has enough problems opening his mouth and letting bats fly out. It could be a real humdinger. well, you know what. But that's not what this is. No. Enough about me. Because we got plenty to do. We got health care that I think is appropriate to talk about this evening. We also have the elections in Iran. And I will simply say that with regard to the elections in Iran, the American in so-called intelligence community, you might easily think of it as the American meddling community as well. That's meddle with a D. Two Ds, an L, an I, and a G, and an N, M, E, you know, but not in that particular order. Meddling, the American meddling community, has a long history of meddling in the affairs of Iran. You remember the seeds of the hostage crisis of the late 1970s were planted in the 1950s. When we deposed the duly and democratically elected Prime Minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh. Mm-hmm. Well, so too, am I reading the reports out of Iran and their post-election trauma and turmoil, and wondering how much we had a hand in. And frankly, I also wonder how much the CIA does that the president never knows about. Remember that phrase, plausible deniability? Plausible deniability is big on the list over at CIA headquarters in, what, McLean, Virginia? So as I see the photographs of the black-clad riot troops who, you know, frankly... And I got these photographs from our buddy, pop culture correspondent David from Maine. And I realize there are certain limitations on talking about, photographs on the radio. But these are at, boston.com. They are, today's page on the internets. The title is Iran's Disputed Election. And on the one hand, when you see all the green-clad young people marching through the streets over what they perceive to be a stolen election, I can't help but think, why didn't America, why did not the United States have that kind of courage in 2000? Why didn't, because these are marches in Tehran. Why did we not clog the streets of Washington, D.C. until not a car could move to prevent that ignorant, pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout from stealing our election from us? Oh, it may prove a fruitless effort on the part of these young Iranians. Entrenched power is entrenched power because it's entrenched, see entrenched. But why didn't we? As liberals and progressives, I think we've got some real live, honest-to-God, genuine navel-gazing to do over that question. Why were there not millions in the streets day in and day out? We certainly existed in the majority, generally speaking. But instead, we let a gang of Brooks Brothers shirted congressional aide thugs stop the vote counting in Dade County. And we're still paying for that. You're still paying for it. Our whole nation is paying for it, and we have paid in buckets of blood and treasure and happiness and jobs and homes and marriages and families. And all the things that make up what it is that we consider to be the essence of the American life. We have paid with what was once the largest single manufacturing concern in the so-called free world. We have paid in bankruptcies. We have paid in a healthcare system that is truly Humpty Dumpty-like. And all the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put the healthcare system back together again, especially insofar as they're trying to put it back together the way it was. It is shattered, and it needs to be rebuilt on entirely new plans. We paid for our silence. We paid dearly for our apathy. We paid with the coin of the realm being the good reputation of the United States around the world. We have paid and paid and paid. And we may never put paid to the damage done by Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rice and, yes, Powell, Wolfowitz, on you